As I've indicated that we are focusing on the annual report for 2006-2007, we are doing that with specific focus to the Department of Public Service and Administration and the South African Management Development Institute. Maybe before we hand over to wondering if really we have to do an introduction, you know, the two heads of department present here, otherwise may consider to write in their annual report in next year to see how many times they introduce themselves to the portfolio comment. But in fact, let's just do that so that for those whose faces seem to be like sort of new, we may get to know each other very well. We are a little bit cramped here. Where do we start? Mama Duman, let's start there. Okay, let me start. I'm Richard Baloya, a member of this portfolio committee and acting for the chairperson.
Kumano, member of the committee.
So Richard Kakane, member of the committee.
Yeah. And Mr. Romini, member of the committee.
Usha Rukarain, member of
the committee. Nebuhandi Kanye, and Mr.
Chomonyam, the member of the committee.
Nkoma Kuchana from TMG, which is the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Good morning, I'm Louise Lepan from Samdi.
Good morning, Rufa Mujana from Samdi.
Good morning, Alva Fumentele from DPSA.
Good morning, Zola Chand from DPSA.
Good morning, Colette
from DPSA.
Good morning, David
Arosana
from DPSA.
Good morning, Richard Levine from DPSA.
Now that I know you all, I'm introduced from the committee.
I don't know, Mr. Ulysses, you are going to say that if we're to vote here, the committee was going to be outvoted. Luckily, we're not. Colleagues, like I've said, that we are here to consider the annual report of the two departments. We want to indicate that as an accountability mechanism, you know, an opportunity like this is presented for us to engage in the report, so that at the end of the day, living from here, the public there expects all of us to say something, to reflect on the report that it is. And of course, as a portfolio committee, Parliament expects us to go back and then report that we have considered the annual report of the Department of Public Service and Administration and of South African Management Development Institute, and this is what is like sort of our observations and reports thereon. So let's do engage. According to our program here, the DPSA is to start, and I want to assure the two heads of the department that it was purely on alphabetical order that we arranged this way. It is in no way suggesting more and less important. That does not pay off. Over to you, DG Levy.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and Honourable Members, and thank you for the opportunity
to engage with you on our annual report. In today's presentation, we're going to look at the vision and mission. We're going to provide an overview of DPSA programs. We're going to look at the strategic outputs for 2006-07. We're going to make some comments on program performance. We're going to look at our HR performance and indicators. We're going to look at our budget allocation and financial performance and make some concluding remarks. Firstly, just to restate our vision and mission, which we did revise this year, but we had already shared that with the committee. The vision is global leader in public service excellence. Of course, this is a lofty and an ambitious vision, but we believe that we have made considerable progress over the last few years, and that we, in fact, are on a road which could well lead to the realization of this vision. And I think our performance in our annual report brings out a lot of positives as well as challenges and negatives, which we'll talk to as well. Our mission is supporting the minister in leading public service transformation, providing professional advice and support to ensure public service excellence, and promoting good governance nationally, on the African continent, and globally. Just to run through our programs very quickly, program one is administration. Program two is integrated human resource management and development. Program three is management of compensation. Program four is information and technology management. Program five is service delivery improvement. Program six is public sector anti-corruption. Program seven is international African affairs. And program eight is planning, monitoring, and evaluation. To talk now to the strategic outputs, Program 1, administration, the key strategic outputs are leading the governance and administration cluster, effective finance and security, repositioning our people management and development, which includes HR administration, organizational development, employee and labor relations, employee health and wellness, and occupational health and safety. Then consistent application of performance management system, a review of risk management controls and governance processes, and the community development workers program. Program two, the strategic outputs, are the strategic repositioning of human resource management in the public service, review of the public service human resource development strategy, HR norms and standards for the single public service, sustainable pools, gender and equality strategy, job access disability strategy, employee health and wellness policy framework, the greater involvement of people living with AIDS, the HR module of the IFMS, human resource information system, HR planning strategic framework, and senior management service review. Moving on to the strategic outputs for management of compensation, these are the management of disputes and or legal challenges against the state as employer, advice to cross-boundary provinces on personnel matters, conclusion of a multi-year wage agreement, implementation of the remuneration policy, a review of the senior management service remuneration dispensation, the development of occupation-specific remuneration dispensations for targeted professionals, the implementation of the policy on incapacity leave and ill health retirement, the review of current leave dispensations, providing advice on job evaluation and grading, the review of job evaluation coordination processes, and the evaluation of retirement fund arrangements in the public service and local government. Program 4 is information and technology management. A key program there, project, is the deployment of the electronic inventory of government information systems. We also need to ensure that CETA complies with the shareholder compact to ensure higher government systems availability. The implementation of the open source policy and strategy, which does give priority to free and open source applications. When unless government can demonstrably show that proprietary solutions and applications would be more effective. To strengthen the GITO Council communications, the website coexistence strategy is around the Batupili information portal and to ensure that the information on the portal and the website corresponds. Hence the coexistence strategy. The mobile track and trace is a system which we've been working on together with the GITO Council and the Department of Home Affairs, which allows citizens making applications on IDs and other documents to SMS and get a response as to where the application is using mobile telephones. To investigate existing South African government systems architecture and to develop a back-end integration framework. In the area of service delivery improvement, project management of the Single Public Service Initiative, the policy on public entities, providing guidance to departments on organizational structures, when the top three tiers from chief director upwards are changed by executing authorities, it is now required that they consult with the Minister for the Public Service and Administration. Development of guidelines on staffing norms, implementation of the service delivery access strategy, cascading Batupili to local government. We have discussed this before. We really need to recognize that at national and provincial governments, we do still have problems with the implementation of Batupili. So it's really implementation of Batupili across all the spheres of government. Development of service delivery improvement plans, Project Kaedu, Community Development Worker Program, support to the Democratic Republic of Congo, implementation of the research agenda, projects on capacity assessment, learning networks, forums, and publications. Program 6, the public service anti-corruption, hosting of Africa Forum and Global Forum 5 on anti-corruption was pretty much central to the work that we did this year. And of course, bringing the United States and Iran to a single declaration on anti-corruption, I think was an achievement of the department. Then the anti-corruption strategy for the single public service, the anti-corruption communication campaign, anti-corruption research, support to the DRC, and assessing the impact of the National Anti-Corruption Framework. Program 7, which is International African Affairs, we have given a more substantial input to the committee a few months ago. The India-Brazil-South Africa Trilateral Forum, indeed the DDG Dr. Cornegay is currently in Central America attending a conference where the IPSA paper on public administration is being presented by India-Brazil and South Africa. Establishing a national chapter of the African Association of Public Administration and Management, which we will be doing in the next few months, moving to a formal launch and then hosting the 2009 UPAM Roundtable in South Africa. Establishing a SADC governance forum and then bilateral and multilateral exchanges. Program 8, monitoring evaluation, support to the presidency on the government-wide M&E system, and then implementation of the public management watch. So those really were the strategic outputs, and now I'd like to talk a bit more about program performance. And I think what we can say is that we have delivered most of our outputs, and preparatory work has commenced in some of the areas where there wasn't full delivery. And in addition to the outputs, the department has implemented projects which have emanated from the July 2006 Zikutla. If we can just look at Program 2, the HR user requirements for the IFMS have been developed. A sustainable pools program for accelerating the development of identified middle managers for promotion to senior management was developed. Of course, this is in cooperation with SAMDI, and increasingly SAMDI would take the lead and responsibility for the accelerated development program, and I'm sure the DG will be speaking to that, amongst other things, later when SAMDI makes their presentation. A scarce skills framework was developed. The framework was implemented in selected departments, including provincial health departments. A draft health and wellness policy framework was developed and consulted on at the Health and Wellness in Daba in October 2006 and updated and refined more recently. A capacity building workshop on health and wellness was conducted and a report completed. And 90% of departments submitted workplace skills plans, of course, to the PCK. Program 3, the management of compensation, the personnel expenditure review was completed and a wage policy developed. The government employees medical scheme was fully established with a policy objective of ensuring adequate, efficient, cost-effective and equitable healthcare coverage to public service employees. An investigation into the public servant dispensation based in foreign countries was conducted and a report was submitted to the DFA in December 2006. A review of the post-medical retirement and development of mechanisms to deal with past discriminatory pension practices are in progress. The policy on incapacity leave and ill health retirement was implemented in the public service. And of course, the salary negotiations began during the financial year, but were completed in the current financial year. Program 4, information and technology management. Disaster recovery plans were developed and tested. The track and trace project, as indicated, was implemented in conjunction with the Department of Home Affairs. A citizen relations portal is in the design phase. Now, this is what one might call a participatory e-governance initiative, which would allow citizens, initially, again, using SMS technology, to give effect to the Vajipili principle of redress by SMSing complaints or issues or inquiries to departments using their mobile telephones. The Vajipili e-Gateway portal information is available in all official languages now, and Cabinet approved the free and open source software policy in the public service, which I mentioned earlier on in the presentation. In the area of service delivery improvement, if we look at Project Kaedu, since its inception, 885 SMS members were trained and over 730 trained officials were deployed to the coalface of service delivery. The department also completed capacity assessments in key functional areas, including health, education, justice and constitutional development, trade and industry, transport, environment affairs and tourism, and housing. And then the CPSI, on behalf of the Department of Public Works, facilitated the implementation of an a learning exchange around the Extended Public Works Program. The fourth annual CPSI Public Sector Innovation Awards were conferred on the 2nd of November 2006. And then in partnership with the Da Vinci Institute for Technology Management in SAMDI, the Executive Development Program in Innovation Management was conducted for 40 officials from the CPSI and the Department of Water Affairs and Forestry. Budget PD Change Management Engagement Program and training was conducted for 116 municipalities. And an initial draft of the Services and Citizens' Rights Information Booklet was completed in March 2007. In the area of public service anti-corruption, the department, in collaboration with others, and the Anti-Corruption Coordinating Committee developed and distributed guidelines on minimum anti-corruption capacity for the public service. As mentioned, we also successfully hosted not only Global Forum 5, but also Africa Forum on Fighting Corruption. In the area of international African affairs, as indicated, we did facilitate a trilateral agreement, which was recently signed when the presidents of Brazil and India were in the country earlier this month. And the Africa Innovation Awards were launched in December 2006. Then on the monitoring evaluation program, the Public Management Watch has been implemented across government. We have engaged with the committee around the Public Management Watch, which allows us to produce quarterly reports on public management effectiveness, and we're able to trace progress or lack thereof in all departments of the public service using this, drawing down information on PARASOL as well as drawing from Treasury's in-year monitoring system. Then the development and publication of the human resource utilization reports and support to the implementation of the government-wide monitoring evaluation system. So that really is a very broad overview of the work that the department has been involved in. But of course, the annual report is also very much about the internal corporate governance of the department. So I think we're moving on to that information. We're going to discuss the human resource information, and then we're also going to look at our financial performance, financial management performance. Now, if we look at the question of employment firstly, as at the 31st of March, the occupancy rate was 384 out of 486 posts, compared to the same time last year, which was 386 posts, 77.7%. So the vacancy rate did drop a small amount, but it's probably something that we would want to talk more about. Obviously, the vacancy rate is a concern for us, so I think it's something we can talk about in the discussions. Moving on to job evaluation, 140 jobs were job evaluated this year compared to 70 jobs last year. 41 posts were upgraded and 2 posts were downgraded. The balance were newly created posts or the grade was retained. And the upgrading affected the posts of 26 employees, 11 of whom were females and 15 males. And the salaries of 8 employees exceed the grades determined by job evaluation. 4 males and 4 females, 5 black and 3 white employees. And this was done in terms of the regulations, either to attract or to retain staff. The annual turnover rate was 22.3%, A total of 153 people were appointed and 67 left the department during this period. Now we sort of look into why employees leave, and this is the breakdown: resignations 22, contracts expired, discharge due to ill health, dismissal for misconduct, promotional transfers to other government departments, and the numbers for each of those categories. In terms of employment equity, if we look at our various targets and status as at the end of March 2007, the target for women in the SMS, these are internal targets. The overall target is 50% by 2009 across the public service for women. And I think we can be proud of what we've accomplished because we're well on the way. And I think one of the criticisms has been made before of other departments in the public service is when you look at these figures, a lot of the SMS are at director level, whereas I think ours goes right up to the DDG level. And we clearly are going to be able to meet the 2009 target, although for the public service as a whole, there is a major concern there, but I think we're doing all right. The target for blacks in the senior management service, our status there indicates a need for improvement. The target for women on levels 9 to 12, middle management, 50%. We've achieved 53%. And again, our target for blacks on levels 9 to 12 of 73%, we've exceeded that. So I think overall in the area of employment equity, we have done well, but there are still areas where we need to improve. I think the figure we don't have there is for disabled. I think we'll give you the figure, just 1.3%.
1.3%?
Yes. The target is 2. We have improved substantially.
2.5.
No, it's 2. We have improved. We recognize we want to exceed that target, actually. And we are doing work because I think if you look at our previous year, we were way behind. So I think the measures we've taken and the focused and targeted recruitment has paid off, but we will still need to improve, although that's a 2010 target, by the way. So I think we're well on the way to achieving it. In terms of performance rewards, 33% of employees receive these. 30% on levels 1 to 2, 2.7% on senior management service level, and we've given a gender breakdown, females receiving 52% of those awards. Just in terms of the status on foreign workers, 2 employees are foreign workers, 1 at SMS level and 1 in the middle management service. The status on sick leave, 233 employees used 1,089 normal sick leave days within the first year of a 3-year sick leave cycle. 207 days of incapacity leave were taken by 14 employees. All leave was supported with medical certificates. A total of 170.34 CAT leave days were used by 15 employees. Leave payout was granted for 7 employees due to operational reasons. And leave payout for 10 people on the termination of service. And the total rand value of that. In the area of employee health and wellness, an SMS member has been designated to implement Part 6E of the Public Service Regulations. We have a qualified practitioner and a team in place to promote an integrated health and wellness program in the department. We also have a wellness committee in place. We have occupational health and safety committee and the wellness committee to deal holistically with occupational health and safety issues. Policies are reviewed in line with amendments to the public service regulations. We have legal frameworks in place to deal with specific measures of discrimination. The department does encourage people to undergo voluntary counseling and testing. We don't keep records, it's not required. And ongoing monitoring evaluation is part of our comprehensive departmental health and wellness policy. In the area of labor relations, we reported 6 misconduct cases, 1 regarding procurement irregularities, 1 regarding insubordination, 1 pertaining to drunkenness on duty, 1 false accusations, and 2 dealing with absenteeism. 20 grievance cases were resolved during the period under review, and 2 are still unresolved. 2 disputes were settled, and 1 case was dismissed, and 1 employee was suspended. In the area of skills development, of the 698 skills development interventions identified from the personal development plans of staff, 173 of the 384 employees received various types of training, 68 were females and 105 were males. I think this is an area where we do need to improve and develop a more systematic approach. Now on the financial statements, I would like to indicate to the committee that SCOPA has decided this year to call all national departments. So we have already appeared before SCOPA. And I think the Auditor General gave us a good rating. We did have a clean audit, no qualification, no emphasis of matter. The Auditor General, however, did note a number of matters, none of which were critical, but some of which were serious, and we have engaged with SCOPA. I think it was a good engagement. It was a learning experience for us as well. So we did get a lot of affirmation, but at the same time, criticism in some key areas, particularly around, I would say, risk management, which we would definitely need to pay more attention to, more systematically going forward. I think that was one of the areas of problem. Another challenge for us is the 30-day payment period. We have made a lot of progress during the financial year just passed. We take it very seriously because we recognize in order to build SMMEs within South Africa, we need to ensure that we can turn around payments quickly enough. Overall, what we have done is we've developed a management plan to respond to all the issues raised in the audit report, and we were able to supply that to SCOPA as well, and we will be working on that plan during the coming months. We've already started working on that plan, and hopefully we'll do even better the next year. But it was a clean audit with no qualification or no emphasis of matter. If we look at our key cost drivers, they are listed there, GEMS, PILA, the APRM, Cabinet, and so on. And if we look at the appropriation allocation versus expenditure, comparing the 2006-07 year to the 2005-06 year, the percentage is not there, but I think basically the actual expenditure is around 97%. And in terms of the saving, most of those funds actually were rolled over for completion of projects during the current financial year. So our expenditure performance was also pretty good. Not quite as good as the previous year, but still quite satisfactory. Then the next graph just looks at a comparison on program expenditure between the two financial years, 5-6 and 6-7. And then the next one looks at the economic classification compensation, comparison. And it shows where we had a major increase in terms of goods and services and transfers. The goods and services to some extent also relates to the implementation of Pillar. But I think the chairperson of SCOPA did indicate that he would like to see us making less use of consultants in future years. I think it is an issue we've taken quite seriously, but one of the challenges with that is if we are going to achieve all our strategic outputs without outsourcing, we need to grow our self-establishment. And we have, over the last few years, made applications to the National Treasury for additional funding to expand our staff complement in order to do more of the work in-house, but the funding has not been forthcoming. And that, I think, has also had an impact on the whole issue of when we discuss the vacancies in the department and our vacancy rates, because we've developed an organizational structure which is not actually fully funded. So I think that's one of the things we want to clean up during this year, is to put down the real organizational structure in terms of the funding, because we did a restructuring which the minister approved, but then Treasury didn't supply us with all the funds. So that also does, to some extent, distort the picture around vacancies. So we want to, during this year, come up with the actual structure which is fully funded. In any event, moving on to the next one, which is the picture of the consultants, which we would probably want to talk about as well. And I think I have already commented on that. But I think at the same time, while there is a lot of use of consultants, if we look at the proportions, consultants as a percentage of goods and services, there is a drop from 5-6 to 6-7 of around 8% in the use of consultants. So we are sort of in the right trajectory. But like I've said, the challenge is, you know, to have the necessary capacity in our own organizational structure to do the things we want to do without having to outsource and bring in other expertise. We have also a slide here on local and foreign aid assistance, the expenditure on various donor funds, where we've shown a decrease as well, which I suppose might be positive because it's showing that we are more self-reliant in terms of the work we're doing. And it would obviously not look good if there was an increase there and an increase in our under expenditure. So nevertheless, although we didn't have expenditure from GTZ, we have continued to cooperate and work with them. They are also funding elements of the International African Affairs Program, so that All Africa Innovation Awards, which is led by Mauritius, is also co-funded by the GTZ. So the collaboration continues. Just on the departmental revenue table, there are some corrections which we need to make. Basically the actuals for 2005-06 are the actuals for 2006-07. We apologize for that error. The slide now is correct if the members would like to change their existing slide there. The slide up there is the correct picture there. Conclude now. The annual report does talk to the major achievements for the 2006-07 financial year. There's a number of challenges in terms of achieving our output and doing the things that we need to do across the public service, challenges in terms of our own internal corporate governance, performance and arrangements. But I think at the end of the day, we do believe that the department is growing from strength to strength. We have a new team in place now for over a year at the top management level, which has also contributed significantly to better performance. So we believe that the global leader in public service vision, which we've espoused, is something that we are on the road to achieving. Thank you very much, Chairman.
Thank you, Gigi. And colleagues, that's over to us for questions, for comments, for Mr. Ulis, you're the first one, Mr. Mene, Dr. Rukmarin, Matomela, Mr. Kumalo, Mr. Nyambi, in that order.
I would just like to know, Chita, how do you make the meeting with them and say you people are the one to pay them? It's true. The partners are the one to pay them, the state is the one to pay them, they must wait for their money and they can't perform their duties. Now you say to me you want to you work in a 30-day period or a 3-month period. I don't know. Okay. Aren't they a partner in this? Who's going to be, or are they 650 from us, or what?
Jay, thank you. I want to refer to the meeting of SCOPA last week. And one specific issue was the vacancy rate in the public service. And we as party also issued a statement on this whole issue. On the findings, and it was a report that was done, I believe, from the Public Service Commission on Persol and the real vacancies in government service. And the result of that is very worrying in terms of, it brought out that the Persol system has 240,000 more vacancies than the department indicated. If that is true, and we've got two figures that we are working on, my question is, how can we budget? It can be possible that out of that 240,000 people who are on platform, they get paid and nobody will know that. So there's a lot of questions out of this whole issue of the differences. On vacancies in departments and vacancies that on the department system. I think maybe we should get an explanation on how it works and what are we going to do to bring those two in line.
I just want to touch on the skill shortage because most of us listened to Minister Manuel yesterday. He said it's almost a global phenomenon. I mean, a country like India, which is the epicenter of IT, they have huge shortages. And he also said that in terms of the European Union, I think they want to get like 20 million skilled people. And he referred it to a specific portion. We have a country, we're already facing a skill shortage now. What are we to do? I mean, how are we going to become more vigorous? I think even someday, maybe later on, they're going to be able to enlighten us on this. That's my concern. I mean, I know you've put in place skills development plans. We need to be more vigorous on this. It's also tied into the vacancy rate. Thank you.
Thanks, Madam
Mazoma. Thanks, Chairperson. DG, you have indicated that on the management of compensation, that personnel expenditure reviews have been completed and a wage policy has been developed. I just want to know as to what extent does this review address the issues around compensation that were raised in the previous strike that we had earlier this year. And secondly, Chair, on the on employment changes, I realize that one of the major reasons why employees leave is through resignations. I'm sure you do conduct exit interviews. I just want to know as to what are the major reasons for that and how are we addressing those issues. And on the program expenditure comparison, that's the slide there. I see there is a sharp increase on the management of compensation for 2006-2007. But I'm not able to reconcile that with the slide just underneath, because there it shows compensation, but the increase there is 28.38%. I'm not sure whether this sharp increase, how does it reconcile with that? Is that reasonable, or is there something else that you do not understand? And then finally, DG, on the issue of the structure, you're saying you are looking at restructuring in accordance with funding. But my understanding of management is that we have got to structure according to our strategy. You strategize, then you structure, then obviously the funding should fall. But it seems you are doing it the other way. Is there any specific reason for that? And is that going to enable us to achieve our goals and objectives? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. KK.
It's with regard to the department's engagement scope, and it appears to me that the DG was already preempting some questions that may arise at the time of the same scope. And what I want to know is which specifics around these financial statements you raised that you may want us not to go into any. Because it seems that you really are apprehensive. That's the question that we have. Thank you.
Before I take I think KK reference to Scopo just by the way comment. Not to suggest that we as a portfolio committee may not raise the same issue. you'll find that some of the issues that COPPA raised when they interacted with the were actually reported in the media and stuff like that. So you might find that those are things already for public comment. So I think it is in that context. And even if it's not in that context, as chairing this meeting, I would say it should be in that context. so there's nothing that would actually limit us. Actually dealing with that.
Thank you, Chair. Let me join those that comment. The presentation that was well done, in any way, assisting us to understand what's going on. So I think two or three questions. The first one, is in relation to people living with disabilities. The 1.3 versus the target of 2%. Can't it be possible maybe to have a profile of race and gender? Because I read HSRC report, it was reflecting something different. So it would be of interest to some of us to have the 1.3 profile according to race and gender. Then the second one, Chairperson, for 2006-07 financial year, the government and cluster had four broad priorities. The first one is good governance, the second one is capacity of the state, the third one is micro-organization of the state, the last one is transversal systems. Then, if you go to the report from Auditor General, there are some few issues that I feel maybe if we can be clarified on. The first one is in relation to the audit committee. How things were done when it's indicated here that for a period of almost 6 months, the department did not have an audit committee. And the second one, in 2006-07 financial year, there was an irregular expenditure of 2.2 million, if I'm not mistaken. If we can be taken on board about progress up to this far in relation to the relevant employees that we charged. The last one, Chairperson. Special investigation discovered that when there was this forensic investigation that was conducted during this financial year, there was a suspected fraud that was discovered in the United States within PSETA. During the previous year. If DG can take us through that one, then maybe I'll come to another stage.
Sure, thanks. We will recognize you as the first one to make follow up. DG, can we agree that this is the first round you respond to, then we'll take a follow-up and second round?
Thanks, Chairperson. I'm going to run through the questions, but I'm also going to allow the members of the team to engage, and I'll sort of indicate as I go through, and then they will also come in. Look, I think on CETA there's a big discussion there. But suffice to say, in relation to our department and CETA, one of the problems we've had, to be honest, is that CETA issues its invoices late. But the CFO will comment on that more specifically. So I'm just sort of saying, because it was a general question, but in as much as we, the DPSA, forgetting about the relationship, between the DPSA and CETA, given the role of the minister as the sole shareholder of CETA, just as a client's department, if you like, of CETA. That's one observation we can make, is that invoices are issued late, but the CFO will give more information on that. I think the vacancy rate issue, as the Honourable Mr. Minnie has pointed out, our engagement with Scopel was preceded by a Public Service Commission presentation on a report they did. And I think there's sort of been a few attempts to look at the actual vacancy rate in comparison to PERSAL. I think the DA itself, I can't remember, it's about 12 months ago, did some sort of estimations as well. They came up with a smaller figure of actual vacancies, I think 40,000, 40-something thousand. We did another one where we came up with 20-something thousand. The Public Service Commission's research came up with 60,000, I think, as Mr. Mini has indicated. I think the issue of, you know, whether or not people are getting paid who are not public servants, the relationship between the payroll and the HR information, the CFO can also engage with that, and possibly Colette Clark would also want to engage with that particular aspect. But I think part of the problem also comes back to the other question about the restructuring that we did in our department. You see, we started with a strategic restructuring. So we reviewed our strategy, we came up with a proposed structure, it was submitted to the minister, it was approved, and then that became the official establishment of the department. But the funding that we applied for through the MTF process, and we're going back into the previous financial year from the one we're discussing here, was not approved by Treasury. And in any event, what was approved was a certain amount for year one, year two, year three. So there was never a time where we instantly had sufficient funds to populate, to fill the post on that approved establishment. And I think that goes to the heart of some of the problems that have been raised by Mr. Mini, and that is the establishment which is captured on PERSAL and the actual establishment in reality in a department and the funding available, those things don't all match up. And that's why we've got this information problem around what the true picture of vacancies are. And that's why we have a situation on PERSAL, as you've indicated, we have 300,000 or so vacancies. But if we look at the compensation budget across the public service, we're generally seeing a picture of around 97% expended on compensation, which means that against that background, it's impossible to have 300,000 vacancies within the public service. So there is an information management problem, but that should not detract from the real problem of effective systems for recruitment and retention of employees, which I think is where the real concern is. It's just that we can't put the figures all that accurately. And like I say, there have been various estimations, the three that I've mentioned. It is a big discussion, which, you know, we can continue in future, but I think the CFO will comment specifically on this issue of the payroll, PERSAL as a payroll system, PERSAL as an HR information system, and whether or not we have people getting paid who shouldn't be paid, which is not actually a problem, but she'll explain the technicalities of that. I think on the skill shortage,
just message, if we're to pause a little bit and reflect on this one, if it means
dealing with this item, they have engaged slightly on this item because, I mean, to me, it's a serious issue that, I mean, you are assessing one public service, different institutions on vacancy rate, but the issue is that the figures are different. What is at play? Is it more about the personal thing? Is it more about the question around definition of vacancy? You know, there are sometimes an issue around this thing. Let's actually reflect on this. Let's get into a little bit of a discussion. If the CFO wants to come in now, we rather do that. So that we actually deal with this matter, and then we'll come to that. Mr. Meni will be the first one. Let me just say.
Okay, let Deirdre and then Colette both make some inputs on this matter.
Okay, I will just explain that the TASO has got two parts to it. The one is the HR fiscal part, and the other one is the payroll part. Now, the establishment lies on the HR module of TASO, and it is not linked directly to the pay system. The payroll works on appointments. So you have to do an appointment from the HR system to the payroll system before salaries can be paid. That's why we are confident that there would not be payment of people because they are posted on their salaries.
Mr. Julius, can we be a little bit organized?
Okay.
Just note that point. I can see it. I have seen what you have written on a piece of paper. It's so important. But just hold on. Then let's just get still.
What we also discussed in the SCOPA meeting the other day was the Auditor General indicated that the figures that is reported in the annual report of the department are audited figures. So those are probably the most accurate figures of the vacancy rate that you have marked.
I'll share with you the reality from a provincial perspective in terms of what distorts the whole issue of the vacancy. Generally, for two provinces that I worked in, the way the treasuries do their projections are basically the same, where they take a snapshot of a particular month in the year, normally September, on the actual system to project in terms of the money that they are going to endorse for the particular line department. What one has seen in terms of general practice is that the departments would then make sure not to adjust the establishment downwardly, even though they don't have the money, for purposes of ensuring that they've got a higher projection in terms of what is on the system. So the problem is the management of the personnel system. We are currently running a project called the HR Connect project, which is the Human Resources Information Management System. We are doing that in 22 departments. The first thing we asked them for was their approved organogram so that we could load it against the post and the job descriptions and the job analysis. And what we found is that there is a definite problem in relation to the actual organograms that they are supplying in and the individuals that are appointed. There are less people appointed to the organograms that they are giving us in terms of the approved organograms, because of the issue of projections and making sure that they can ensure higher funding in terms of what they're putting on the table. So we're trying to streamline in the Human Resources Connect project that what is on the organogram, there must be a warm body match to that particular position, as well as a job description, which links up to the skills question that one of the members had asked, because we're having a serious problem in relation to the definition of skills outside the skills auditing process as well. And Department of Labor has come up with an organizing framework for occupations, which is assisting us to streamline and will be clear as to what are the skills in terms of the descriptor of those category of skills, but linked to the organogram as well as linked to the vacancy, and then also well linked to the payment when one is getting a report on those. So clearly, in the practice in line departments, for those of us that have been in education, one of the systems is when you create and post on the personnel system for temporary teachers against vacancies, it's not the same as the vacancy. The coding is completely different. if an essential point you're pulling out for a department where there are 5,000 vacancies, it doesn't mean that there aren't 5,000 temporary teachers being paid against those posts. And hence, there is a bloating of what you're getting and a distortion of the particular data, depending on the legislative framework for that particular sector as well. And those are the challenges in terms of how do we streamline it to get systems to talk to each other, that when we're interpreting the data and what we're getting at the central level, it actually is uniform in terms of our interpretation of that particular data. Thanks.
It's becoming quite technical.
Yes.
But it's fine. It's interesting to listen to this. The fact is, we're sitting with a problem, and we must rectify it in some way. And the question is, who is responsible to do this? I think somebody must take responsibility. And I think CETA must play a major role on the PASOL. Are they running PASOL? Are they responsible for the PASOL system? Who?
No, Treasury.
But at the end of the day, are they using CETA, the system? I don't know. But the thing is, we're sitting with a problem, and we're not rectifying. I mean, we can't come with figures like this in public. The other thing is, in this report of the public service, it was announced that 6 departments didn't reply on this issue of vacancies. Now, that is irresponsible, and we can't just let go on this one. I think we must find out which 6 departments didn't reply when they were asked to reply on the issue of vacancies. And it is reported like that 6 departments did not reply. And I think the Portfolio Committee has got a responsibility to get that information and jump on the departments. How can they do their job if the departments is not responding? Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I don't think we can emphasize this more than how can in the department your right hand don't know what your left hand is doing. Now you sit with person here saying this is the figure, and then we say we work on a payroll figure this time. Now somehow somebody must order these figures here. Now on which figures you do now, who ordered whose figures and what is the right figures? We must at least we must know what we're doing. One department with the other department, person with employment and things like that. Otherwise, how are we going to deliver services if we don't know what we're doing? And honestly, Jay, this is a very serious issue. If we don't know what we're doing in government, then how do we expect people outside to know what they're doing if we can't take the lead? We must take the lead. We must be sure what we're doing. If you must kick out person and say there's other system, or why a one system for the home, a public service, then we must work with one system, but we can't work with two systems because I believe in SCOPA. I hear what the nurse was saying, Mr. Sogate was saying, on their findings. Departments don't respond to questions. Head of departments, it's unacceptable. Thank you, Chair.
He's actually promoting a single public service. Yes.
On this other one, Chairperson. This is really technical, and I'm a bit enlightened. Now I understand that temporary can mean vacant. So what I would suggest is that department look into this confusion, because you cannot say you have, for example, 100 vacancies, whereas you have 100 individuals occupying this position. I think that one would be correct. Thank you.
Yeah, I think what is critical is that, you see, that's why I said let's pause a little bit and reflect on this thing. Because otherwise, if you don't, you end up in a situation where you say there is a problem, but you are not able to identify that problem. And you end up saying that, of course, if there is a problem, somebody needs to act. It has to be attended to. But whoever has to come in and act, and whoever has to like sort of do an oversight on whether that action is forthcoming, what is it that actually has to be done? I think the point that we are raising takes us closer to them saying, identify it as what it is. Any comment on that, on this current, I mean, this training so far now, on the side teaching?
I'll also give the colleagues a chance if they want to. But I think, just very briefly, in terms of the systems which underpin this, there is a huge initiative at the moment known as the Integrated Financial Management System, which would have the advantage of better integration of the transversal systems. But there will still be that human factor, if I can put it that way, where departments will need to manage their systems properly. It will upgrade the role of CETA as well, because CETA will become the primary systems integrator. But at the moment, Treasury is responsible for management of the transversal systems with support from CETA, but the roles will change slightly going forward into the IFMS. But at the end of the day, and I would just like to emphasize this for the Honorable Mr. Minnie's point as well, is that he's also mentioned the single public service. Even in that context of the single public service, we are emphasizing that the current decentralized public management system will continue to be in place under the single public service. I'm emphasizing that because the issue of who is responsible, a lot of the responsibility is with individual departments. Individual departments are responsible for their data. And the issue raised by the Honorable Ulis is a real issue, even in our department, about the left hand and the right hand knowing what they're doing. I take that as a criticism. It's very much a problem across the public service of how HR, finance, line functions, the need for better synergy in working relationships is a real issue at a high level and going down to a low practical level. But fundamentally, when we're dealing with these problems, it comes down to individual departments, because we have a decentralized system of public administration and management, which we intend maintaining and strengthening, but departments must comply. And that's the point that comes out in terms of working with the PSC on their survey. And I can assure you there's many surveys and other kinds of work that we do, some of which is not research, some of which is hard implementation of human resource management practices, where compliance is a major problem. And hence, the Public Service Amendment Bill and its emphasis on compliance, which is replicated in the Single Public Service Initiative as well. But before I proceed with the rest of the questions, I'm not sure if other members of the team would like to add anything on these matters, on the vacancies and the issues that have come up.
Excuse me, Jay. I want to leave in silence, but can I make just a small comment? I want to say to Mr. Lavinian, there's more good than bad in your annual report. And really, I appreciate it. Job well done. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Mr. Chief.
Okay, now thanks very much for that. We were just starting to respond to the skill shortage issue. I think we will also, when I'm finished, allow Colette to talk about the HRD strategy and how we intend to address the skill shortages. And I'm sure Dr. Orkin, in his session, will also be talking extensively about this problem. On the management of compensation issues, the personnel expenditure review and the wage policy, and whether or not it responds to issues in the strike, I will give Vuyelwa Vumendlini the opportunity. But I would just like to say that fundamentally the wage policy does address many of the issues, because it comes up with the issue of the occupational specific dispensation, which really provides new dispensations for professionals in the public service, beginning with health workers, onto education, the legal professions. I think we all can elaborate on that, but we believe that at the core of the issues that came up in the public sector strike does lie a major frustration. If you look at who participated, who were the real participants in the strike, it was teachers and health workers. Those were the sectors that were most affected. And we believe the occupational specific dispensation is a very direct response to that. I think on the exit interviews, again, I think where we as DPSA have failed internally in relation to what we're pushing for externally, at the GNA level, we did a survey on reasons for people leaving, and we do intend seeking cabinet approval for the minister to issue a directive which would make exit interviews compulsory, because I think that will assist us in better analysing what the issues are. And clearly, it's not only salary related. In other words, people going to greener pastures, either in the public service or outside the public service. It is a major issue in terms of the research we did. It was the predominant reason, almost 50% of people moving. I think I have addressed the matter of the restructuring, and that is the whole process began with a strategy, and against the strategy we came up with a structure, but then the funding was not forthcoming, so hence the need to review in terms of the strategy now and the available funding. We need to put down a structure which can be funded, otherwise we're going to keep on having the same problem in terms of what is on parasol and what is in reality in our department. I don't know if I did a wrong thing by raising the scope, but it wasn't intended to conceal anything. It was just for information. But to indicate that we did discuss the various issues that had been raised by the Auditor General in his report. The matters that I referred to, which were not deemed to be critical but serious. These did relate to various controls, internal controls. There were problems around the commitments, and this related specifically to the cabinet project where SLAs were signed by the acting DDG, who did not have the authority to sign these, and then finance was not aware of that. And it was a very specific problem that arose during the course of the financial year. Also around our lease commitments pertaining to photocopiers and cellular telephones. We've addressed all of that through the establishment of a lease register. There was issues around asset management and the asset register, which we have addressed. We raised the issue of the risk management and the need to improve that. The audit committee, again, is the problem that came up during the course of the financial year, but we did address that. We also need to recognize that audit committees can become a challenge. In order to get members who are willing to serve consistently, that's the one problem. And then when people resign in the middle of the year, it's often quite difficult to get adequate replacements. So, of course, we're not saying, it's right not to have an audit committee, but there were specific problems that arose during the course of the year. But they've been addressed now because we have and audit committee, and at a formal compliance level in terms of the number of meetings held and so on, we were in compliance. But yes, there was a problem during the course of the year, which we addressed. I think certainly we do need to profile the people living with disabilities. We feel we're making progress there, and we also do have people living with disabilities in the management echelon as well now. So, you know, I think in future we do need to give that profile, and we need to just carry on the things that we've been doing in order to make sure that we achieve the targets. But on page 115 of the report, we do have the figures there. So one male African, one male colored, two total blacks, three female African, giving an overall total of five. So we can also break that down in terms of management, the levels in future. Maybe we can just supply that information to the committee if it would be helpful. We can do that as a follow-up. Then on the irregular expenditure, I'll allow the CFO to come in. And on the forensic investigation, she can also address that. But basically, as soon as we identified that there was a problem, and again, it's one of the matters that we did engage with SCOPA around, we did act very quickly. And we froze those accounts, and we immediately called in the NPA, the police, all the relevant agencies were called in. They actually arrested the perpetrator. There is a trial currently ongoing. So we did act very, very quickly, and there is now a forensic investigation. A lot of the money was actually recovered through the quick action that we undertook. So money that had been fraudulently deposited into accounts, because we froze everything, we were able to recover a lot of those assets. So we believe that we dealt with the matter very quickly and got in all the relevant agencies to assist, to the point where the chief culprit is facing charges at the moment and is in police custody. So I think Colette on the HRD strategy, Desiree on some of the issues that I've identified, including the irregular expenditure, and Buyelwa on the salary negotiations and whether we are, through the wage policy and personnel expenditure review, addressing some of the fundamental issues in the strike. Thank you.
Just in terms of the aspects of the skills, we did go through a review of the previous HRD strategy, and the reviewed strategy is dealing with the input that came from line departments. There were a number of gaps in terms of organizations determining their organizational readiness to deliver their mandate, and we've designed a toolkit to assist them in doing that, and therefore can predict what skills are needed. Line departments also indicated that they did not know how to conduct skills audits, because generally there's apprehension in terms of people giving information about their qualifications, about their skills, because they believe it may be linked to their own position in the organization. So it's extremely difficult to really get a total picture, given the fact that there's been this particular distortion in relation to what skills audit data is used for. But one of the challenges we have in terms of the levels below senior management, Cabinet has approved that as from the 1st of April next year, competency assessments for all senior managers will be compulsory, meaning that we would be able to then have a database of the professional, technical, and generic skills against the identified core competencies, and then we'd be able to cogently speak to any skills gap. At the moment, we can't. It's basically anecdotal in terms of people's experiences of where the post can be filled or not, which isn't necessarily linked. But what we are saying is that after running the compulsory competency assessment for senior managers, we will then be in a position to know what needs to be rolled out for the levels below senior management, and therefore we can say, against the job analysis of the positions that exist in government, as well as the skills database which would identify the core competencies that are needed and also that individuals have, where the gap exists. At the moment, we can't tell you that, because you also have to appreciate that to have a compulsory competency assessment framework for the levels below senior management, that then goes into the collective bargaining terrain, and it's another ball game in terms of getting that particular process through the line. But we are confident that once the HRD strategy is approved, that it will empower line departments to basically deal with the issue of the skills development in their own line departments, the way we have actually identified issues. Just to touch point in terms of the previous input from the DT around the exit interviews, is that we launched a consultation document at the SMS conference on the leadership development management strategy. And that was as a response to what came out of the SMS review, but also the review that DG was speaking to in relation to why people leave, the public service. And it has a lot to do with the way in which they engage with the relationships with their immediate supervisors and their managers, because people leave managers, they don't leave organizations. So what the leadership management development strategy is trying to address is how do managers develop competencies to understand vacancy management, retention management, and conduct management, as well as compliance management, which will then assist with the whole aspect of the organizational culture and deal with the issue of preventing resignation if managers have been equipped to deal with that as well. Thank you.
On the issues of the personal expenditure review and the aspects, things that came out of the strike as to whether the wage policy addresses that, yes it does, because the vision or the vision for the wage policy is to position government as an employer of choice. And the aspects that are covered in this new wage policy are issues around remuneration, where we talk about the occupation-specific dispensation. We also talk about improving performance, conditions of service in the public service, and also systems and procedures which currently take place. If I need to talk more about the occupation-specific dispensation, which is in particular to the things that came out of the strike, was that we're looking more at giving public servants the opportunity, allowing public servants to great progress and get pay progression without necessarily having to apply for higher posts for them to get higher salaries. We'd like to keep people also into production, that they do not necessarily want to move into management as opposed to doing the core business that government actually needs. So what the things that had actually came out is that this occupation specific dispensation should not just be a general salary increase, because high salaries do not do anything to the performance of the public service because it doesn't change behavior. However, you want to see a systematic way of the salaries of the public servants increasing throughout their career, such that when you start in the public service, you are at a particular level and you can see your salary maybe doubling, maybe say after being in the public service for 20 years or so in real terms, over and above the cost of living adjustments that all the public servants get. And we have been quite successful with the OSD because the unions have signed the occupation
certification. Will, if I may come in.
Okay.
I'm not like sort of stifling a debate on this issue. But I just want to remind all of us that when we're debating the issue of the strike in Parliament, in the chamber, the chairperson outlined what sounded like a program of action for this portfolio committee to say that we're not getting into these issues at the moment. We respect the separation of powers thing. But you see, the issue of oversight by this portfolio committee is not far from actually also getting into areas where you get more, even about the issues around wage negotiation.
And he then said we'll come back to this issue. I'm reminding this meeting because even in terms of our program as a portfolio committee, we have set aside time. We believe it's enough time. I think it's the whole week where we're actually going to engage on this issue. So I'm saying, whereas it is a very important point to put emphasis on now, just to appeal that maybe let's look at the annual report for the year for the year under review, and then flag this issue. We'll come back to it and get into more details about it. Unfortunately, because of changes of parliamentary program, we'll not be able to do that this year, but early next year, before the end of the financial year, we'll definitely engage on that. So I wanted to then say, we maybe don't go further in terms of providing details on this issue. No, on that one, that she can talk on that. you want to conclude, Will? You want to go on?
No, I guess maybe that's the last thing that I could say is that aspects of the wage policy does address the issues that came out during the strike, even before, and aspects of them have already been implemented. Thanks.
Just on the irregular expenditure, if I can refer you to page 94 of your annual report, there is detail on each case. You will see that for the year under review, there was 4 specific cases that added up to the 2.5 million. And in each case, the disciplinary action has been taken and National Treasury has been informed as prescribed. But I also have to mention that in all these cases, none of this expenditure are considered unauthorized or fruitless. It was in line with the mandate of the department. It was a required service or offered, and they were rendered. The only problem with these ones being irregular is that there are some of the steps in the procurement process that might not have been followed. For instance, a service provider could have been engaged before the official order was handed over. That sort of thing. And all of these, we are waiting for condonement from the National Treasury for the next financial year.
Thanks. That was the first round. Is there any follow-up on responses on the first round? And is there any other question or comment or an issue for consideration now? My Matomela, Dr. Nyambi. I promised Mr. Nyambi that will be the first one. So
you can.
All right, no, you can be flexible. We only have those three hands, am I right? Okay, we have those three hands and mine.
A follow-up on the issue of the structure, Chairperson. I may not expect the DG and his team to give me concrete answers now, but I think I need to make a point that I need, and I think it's important for this portfolio committee to be convinced that we research according to funding, we do not in any way compromise our goals and objectives in as far as service delivery is concerned. I must say, Chairperson, I'm really not pleased about the issue of structuring our organization according to the funding that we have. To a large extent, funding does limit how you do, but what you do, but I think the structure should enable you, among other things, or the major things that the structure should do, should enable you to achieve your goals and objectives, not only to utilize the funds that are available to keep you going. As public representatives, we are under a lot of pressure in as far as service delivery is concerned. Communities have lost patience with us out there. So I would really like to request the department that let's restructure accordingly. I mean, if I want a Mercedes Benz and I believe that I deserve a Mercedes Benz, I must restructure my life in such a way that the 200 rand that I'm paying, that Mosaneke is giving me, will enable me finally to get that Mercedes Benz. So I need to put that in mind. Thank you,
Kevin. You see, if one is employed from one organ of state to deal with a particular function that affects the other organ, that appointment does not elevate the status of that organ of state. So I think they still remain independent as they are. That was on a lighter note. It's over there.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to commend the DPSA on the wellness program. I think it's excellent because, we need to take care of our employees. And are we going to begin to replicate this in all the other departments? Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. Two follow-ups. The first one. Though I'm not a legal person, if an official in a department has flawed procedures, and when you are dealing with the case, he or she decides to resign, is there no way that you can take the issue up with that relevant official? Because the very same page 94 that you're talking about is reflecting almost about two cases that you have those officials resigning before the case can be concluded. Then the last one. I think it's even though we can say money has been spent for what it has been budgeted for, but if you did not follow the procedures, I think there's something serious wrong with that, because if you check, you have more than a million that has been allocated for stationery, as an example. And yes, Mr. Nyambi was supposed to follow procedures to the latter. He decided that no, the 1 million is going to be allocated to stationery, and at the end of the day, we are going to get stationery. But instead of following procedures to make sure that the bid committee is going to adjudicate or evaluation committee is going to deal with it, decide to go and get Mr. X and give it to Mr. X, and then every day the department is going to be having stationery. Are you going to say just because the money was allocated for stationery, then something that can be given a warning, because at the end of the day that money was meant for stationery? That's my understanding of this thing. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks. Over to you, DJ.
Thanks, Chairperson, Honourable Members. I think we do accept the issue on the restructuring as well. And obviously we need to balance the various balls that are floating around there. So we do need to think primarily around strategy. And in relation to resources, I think we do talk a lot about how we can work more smartly, how we can have better cooperation between different branches, because when we talk about coordination at the intergovernmental level, horizontal at national government level through the CASA system, vertical through the intergovernmental relations framework, which is largely driven by the DPLG, we sort of make criticisms about the way in which government works in silos. But even within our own department, we're very guilty of working in silos. And if we can work better cooperatively, we can do more with less resources. So I think the main point you're making is definitely we're taking it on board. We do take that seriously. I will, in a moment, as I finish with Honourable Nyambi's question, also allow Colette to talk more about the wellness program and its rollout across the public service. Now, if procedures are flawed and the official resigns, you know, what do we do about it? It's one of the provisions of the Public Service Amendment Bill, which obviously is replicated in the Single Public Service, which assists us in the case where officials move within the public service. Because in terms of the Public Service Amendment Bill, the new head of department would be compelled to charge that official. Whereas before, officials could move and then the charges would kind of disappear and fall off the table. So the mechanisms are in place, but obviously if an official resigns and leaves the public service, then it's, you know, the transgression has happened, it's over. That is a bit of a problem. But let me talk about a bit about this issue of when procedures aren't followed, and link it with a question on the strategy and achieving service delivery, which puts me in a difficult position at times, because I am strict, actually, on these matters. But a lot of the problems come when there's poor planning by managers, and then we need to deliver something. Now, of course, we're not delivering frontline services to the public, but we, you know, we are delivering services nonetheless. And then they'll come to me at the last minute and want me to do a deviation on procurement procedures. And they find me a bit inflexible. And those are the dilemmas one faces as an accounting officer, is that often people will be arguing in order to deliver they need to take some shortcuts. And that's where a lot of the problems arise. But for me, the key problem is around the plan. If people would be planning properly, they wouldn't have to come to me for deviations. So where the flaws happen often in our specific department comes from poor planning, when people leave things to the last minute, we have to procure a venue, there's not enough time to get the bid committee to sit to recommend a deviation, etc., etc., and that's where we have had problems. So I just thought I would like to mention that. But I think Colette wants to talk about the wellness program in the public service.
We have just hosted the 7th Employee Health and Wellness in Durban. In Durban, we over 500 officials from across the departments were present, and we managed to also launch a consultation document that basically was fed through from the inputs from the previous in Durban last year, and quite extensive consultation processes with all the necessary stakeholders. We also hosted a pre-colloquial conference where we got the academics and we got the medical professionals and the international representatives from the ILO and the World Health Organization to input, and they had endorsed the strategic framework. We've launched it. We've given an opportunity for line departments to comment, and then we take it through the cabinet processes. So what you're seeing here in terms of the DPSA initiatives are also incorporated, and it's gone way beyond that as well, in terms of the holistic wellness program for employees. Thanks.
Thanks for the response, and thanks to the DG for the presentation, to colleagues for the engagement. We are concluding debating this item, noting that the report itself identify some challenges and also mention that there are steps that the department has identified to be able to deal with those challenges. I think that's the first thing that we're noting, and I think it's so helpful for us to have the report up front, actually identifying and saying those things. That becomes the first thing that we're flagging for following up, to then check as to whether there is something that is actually happening. If there is anything that has to be done, as actually a follow-up, I mean, to address those challenges. It means that those things or those activities are actually included in the current program of the department, as this is the annual report of the previous financial year. I think it's necessary that we look at that. We will have an opportunity, I just want to then say upfront, we'll have an opportunity, DJ. I'm sure you saw our program, although that item was not put very clear in the program as to what we expect. This annual portfolio committee annual program review that is coming on the 13th and the 14th of this month. You see, that is an opportunity that we are seeing. We are going to reflect, make a reflection on those things that were priorities for us for this year, the calendar year, and then say, look at the program that we developed ourselves after the strategic planning session, and then see as to what impact did we make to actually see ourselves moving towards the attainment of what we set ourselves to do as contained in the same. We said accelerating service delivery and transformation. Those are the things that we put up there. Now, during those 2 days, that is when we'll be reflecting on how far we have gone. Do a sort of a self-assessment. And then say, where are we? I think it will be this issue, all the issues that we have highlighted in this annual report, as issues that actually will have to be done, will have to form part of what the department will have to talk to in terms of what is it that we do. So that we then say, gone are the days that you will actually have an interaction like this, like for instance, where there are recommendations from a given briefing or recommendation, I mean, or on the board. You find that those are just given so that we start the meeting and conclude, say bye-bye, have tea and go, and then so be it. We would like to actually follow up on those things, and I think the challenges that are contained in the report are actually going to be looked. And I think, members, we are going to, like, sort of, even those who may not have an opportunity to thoroughly consider or study this report, I think it is necessary that we do that. So that come that day, we are able to, like, sort of, engage. Of course, we have flagged other issues at this meeting that are not actually flagged as issues that need follow-up in the report. I mean, issues around information management, the issues we identified there. I think it's something that we need to look at and then see as to how far we go. That then takes us to the end of the session. And thank you very much. Shall we take 10 minutes to break when we come back? Okay, then you will lead your team to understand this. And Doctor, those functional boxes are not like the one that Barbara was building.
Thank you, sir. And then, just a quick introduction. Chair, you yourself painted the broad goals of the meeting, which is to review the year against the strategic goals. Now, colleagues, you do have, of course, our annual report. We were questioned about the unit cost, which we think is 160 rand, that's quite reasonable. We would ask you to pass any duplicates across to external stakeholders so that you will be our ambassador. But because all the very formal compliance reporting is in the book, and of course there it is arranged by program and with different sections required by the Treasury and the Auditor General, we've been a little more selective and integrative. In other words, we've ordered our presentation really to try and tell the story in a coherent way, but you will find, as we've gone through it, that we will have touched on the key deliverables, the associated indicators, the requisite output. It's just we feel that our way of presentation is more user-friendly than the way the annual report has rather been chopped up between the various compliance authorities. And importantly, you'll note, Chair, that a key development during the year and underway as we are halfway through the next year is, of course, our strategic planning for massification and the beginning of the rollout. Quite substantial reorientation of the organization, which we will present. So necessarily, for a coherent picture, we do flow over the time period in order to show how the planning that was in the financial year is rolling into the implementation in the early part of the next year, and the goals that we'll be telling you about our performance reporting this time the year after. So it is all a little bit more fluid. We hope for that reason it will also be interesting and usable. So colleagues, that's our introduction. There you see the structure of how we'll present, and I'll immediately hand over to Mr. Maklana to point out as context and performance, and then it will be taken over for the other headings by other colleagues.
Thank you, Chairperson, thanks DG, and honorable members and colleagues. My presentation, or my part of the presentation, will be focusing on the context and performance. The first slide basically looks at the public service as the sort of the starting point, because that's where we are operating, and I believe that we shared this slide previously with members. But we will always keep up this slide or bring up this slide to sort of illustrate the magnitude of numbers which are facing us as a training and development arm of the public sector. If you look at these numbers, one of the most important numbers is to know that the bulk of our public servants are located in provincial departments. Obviously, some of them will be located in provincial departments, but some of them are in the provincial sections or provincial sites of national departments. If you go, and the overall public service is about 1.3 million, but that also includes the officials at local and municipal level. One of the highlights under the breakdown here is to know that 25% of the population of the public service comprise African, and with other breakdown, 9% colored, 4% 12% white, and 4% Asian. But one of the most important features is the 54% female representation in the total population. Though we need to acknowledge that in terms of the senior management service, we are not at that particular level. This is the total percentage of female things across the salary levels. And obviously 1% is SMS, and then about 5% comprise junior and middle management levels. This is where we see ourselves. And these numbers may not make sense when we talk about performance of the previous year, but they'll make sense, especially when we come to our section on massification, where we want to ratchet our coverage in terms of training development. The next slide deals with our approach. That's Sunday, and we are referring to just the previous approach for specific reason that this is the model, the business model which we use during this particular financial year. Therefore, it's previous in the sense that at the moment we are moving to a new organization, new business model, and new strategies in order to ensure coverage, quality, and better performance. Our mandate, as reflected there, broadly speaking, is mainly to arrange, provide quality-oriented and user-oriented training and development programs with the main purpose, the last phrase there being the key to improve sales delivery and implementation. The context of our training is geared towards improving sales delivery and implementation of common programs. The second part is our priorities. Where do we derive our priorities? Firstly, we derive our priorities from the governance and administration plus program of action, the human resource development strategy for the public service, user needs, and requisites or requirements of the governmental state. Therefore, those four or five sectors determine as to where do we focus as a training arm of government. As we all know, we are also on cost recovery. we are not on full cost recovery as we are. We are thinking about partial cost recovery, given the fact that we do not recover all the costs in terms of development of our programs, marketing, etc. Also, taking into account that we also get an allocation from the fiscal. Mode of delivery, mainly we deliver through three modes. One is our own trainers, which amount to about 20 on-bodies as family trainers. But we also have a contingent of what we call independent contractors who are in a form of associates. We interview them, appoint them, but we only pay them when they do train on our behalf. We also have several service providers who are private. But above all, we've got strong partnership in a form of high teaching institutions, which we refer to them as strategic partners. This table summarizes the information in the annual report in terms of training delivery. And we felt that it would be appropriate for us to not only give you our performance in terms of the 2006-07 performance, but we need to also to show how that relates to the 2005-06 performance. I just want to take you to the bottom of the table there, the totals, just to indicate to you that the year under discussion, 2006-07, we achieved 98,000 PDDs as opposed to 79,000 PDDs in the previous year, which shows a 24% increase on last year's performance. But to show you the total picture, in terms of our plan, our planning, we plan to have or to achieve 116,000 PDDs in this particular year, which indicates that if we take the projections just per our previous plan, I did a wrong assumption, but honorable members understand that particular prevention. It stands for person training days, and we work it out on the basis of the number of days per course multiplied by the participants who undergo the particular test.
Colleagues, on the next slide, we should have swapped the order around.
Going back to the table, you know that in our training range divide, as mentioned, development corporate programs, there are a number of digital students which are left to go to the table. One is the fact that
In terms of our targets, in 2006-07, under management leadership, we achieved 47,000 PDDs, which is beyond the target which we set. For corporate resource management training, we went down there, though it's an improvement over the previous year, but we went down because our estimation was 1,000 PDDs, and I'll come to residence in the next slide. Change management, again, we had a drop there on 22,000 PDDs as compared to even the last year. Therefore, we got a minus performance there. Therefore, the percentage-wise, in terms of management, we had 127% performance. Corporate resource management training, which deals with finance and project management, is 57% performance, and we've got 82% performance under change management. In this particular section, now we are looking at the overview to say what was the overall performance and what led to some of the drop or overachievement in some of the time. First of all, the present training date for 2006-07 represents 24% increase on the previous year, which we are going to register. However, we are 16% short of our target for 2006-07. And that 2006-07 target was rather ambitious in the sense that we based that increase for 2006-07 on the performance of the previous year 5-6. But ignoring the fact that we are operating with the same structure, same number of people, and same strategy or business model. Therefore, hence we are saying that the target we set for 6-7 was rather ambitious. And the main cause for a drop in change management and service delivery improvement PDDs is the reduction of training. We had an MOU with social development which contributed to the lower numbers there. And I think we also raised this particular factor in one of the presentations during the course of the year, that we experienced a drop there. As far as the reduction in corporate resource management training is concerned, we had a delay in rolling out financial management and project management training within the particular chief directorate because of unforeseen circumstances, like for instance the delay in approval of the programs and their registration with the relevant CETAs. We complied with all the requirements, but when we submitted the programs for accreditation, we experienced some delays there. Under management and leadership unit, that's where we noted a significant high number of PDDs there, and that emanates from our middle and junior management programs, which are very popular. But apart from being popular, the model of delivery which we're using in that particular unit involves high education institutions. And it also gave us a sense that this group of public officials are interested in programs which are one associated with universities because they are associated with credits for further study in those universities. This year-on-year comparison is just for illustrative purposes, just to illustrate to you the 2005-06 as opposed to 2006-07. In 2006-07, we started at a bit low in terms of our training in April. But we picked up in June, and we reached our peak in September, as opposed to the 2005-06. But I think it's also worth noting to say that during January, December, there's low demand for training, which needs to inform our plan. This particular slide is just also for illustrating to you the number of programs and the categories of competencies in which we conduct our training. We've got about 50 odd programs, and that 50 those 50 programs do not include programs which are by order. That means programs which are designed or developed because of a particular request from a department. Like for instance, we can talk about chain of trainers for AMDIN, AMDIN for African Management Development Network, which is sponsored by the Japanese funding agency. These are programs which are there, but they're categorized into six broad competencies. One is about leadership capacity, the second one is about managing public finances, the third one is cost-cutting programs, which deals with governance issues like diversity management, disability management in departments. The third one is about Basupini and community development, that is the service delivery improvement kind of programs. The fifth one is on human resource development and management within the public service. And the last one is on good governance. This just to illustrate you the portfolio of programs which you are having within the department. In this particular slide,
DPSA mentioned that the human resources development strategy for the public service is in a very late stage of development. We've of course been on the task team which has been developing that strategy, and will, as we move into the academy, further align the range of offerings that we will facilitate to cohere with their strategy. But already the broad areas are very much the broad areas which you would expect in their strategy, which we are covering. So the systems are moving forward together.
Thanks, Iggy. This particular slide and the next one sort of picks up some of the key highlights in terms of training development within SAMD over the past year. The first one is the Public Service Trainers Forum, which was hosted by SAMD last year. It was the 10th one, noting the fact that we had 9 previous conferences which were hosted by various provinces. Currently, we are in discussion with DPSA to make this particular forum more responsive to the needs of the human resource development practitioners within the public sector. And I think we should be able to report some progress in that regard in the next year. The second one is the implementation of the ADP. You might have noted in the presentation from DPSA, they talked about the sustainable tools program. That particular program has got a capacity building element of it, which we refer to as the ADP, Accelerated Development Program. We commenced with this particular program in September last year, and so far 5 cohorts have been trained, and the advanced phase has been completed. But the key program, as DPC also emphasized, or the key aim, is to advance black females and people living with disabilities to SMS levels within the public sector. The third one is about our supply chain management training, which is doing very well within the local government level, given the fact that that particular sphere of government has been having some challenges in terms of supply chain, and we are impressed about the uptake on this particular program in covering all 280 municipalities, including the second round of training, which started last year in November 2016. The financial management area, which is key, we reported in our PDDs that there was a delay on this particular program. 11 programs so far during this particular year were approved by National Treasury, and training programs have been finalized for rollout during the current financial year. The last one on this particular slide is about the mass induction program. We are having another slide which will be referring to this particular program. This program has been, we strategized and we planned on this particular program to targeting 100,000 new entrants into the public service each year. Therefore, over the past financial year, we've been doing planning, taking into account the dynamics in terms of addressing those particular numbers, the capacity required to ensure that we respond to it, and resources required, and we engage National Treasury on this matter, and one can also reveal that we request support from National Treasury to fund this particular program in the current year. The last slide on this particular performance also continues on highlights. The DRC training implementation was approved by DRC counterparts in 2006 to assist them with capacity building, and our capacity building efforts commenced in line with the DPSA program in February 2007. The second bullet is about the International Training Center, a capacity building arm of the International Labour Organization, which partnered with Sandy to do training of 20 public servants on gender mainstreaming in this particular financial year. And these 20 public servants come from the gender functional desk in department, in provinces. And after training these 20 participants, top nine were selected to undergo further training in Italy, which was very successful. The next highlight is on gender mainstreaming training program, which is funded by CEDA. And this particular program did not have unit standards or training unit standards. And during the financial year, we managed to develop those training unit standards, and we managed to register them with the South African Qualification Authority. The next project is also on the CEDA for gender mainstreaming project. We received $800,000 Canadian dollars from CEDA to fund this particular program, and some of the outputs or deliverables on this particular funding will be realized during this financial year. Last but one, 281 senior managers from the Correctional Services Department have been trained on ethics management and anti-corruption, and we regard this particular highlight as important because area of ethics management and anti-corruption was prioritized by the Department of Correctional Services. And lastly, 261 anti-corruption officers from national, provincial, and local government departments have been trained on what we term minimum anti-corruption capacity requirements, which were determined by DPSA. Therefore, you'll note, members, that in most cases, our program responds to policy initiatives which come either from National Treasury in the form of supply chain management, or DPSA, or CITAS in terms of informing our training program. Let me pause here and head over to the next presenter on the financial part, and I think it's Marlies Okadjia.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, DG and colleagues. Thanks for the opportunity to present the financial performance of Standard for the 7-8 financial year, as well as aspects about the human resource oversight report. Maybe just as an introduction, Sambia's Institute consists of two entities, namely Sambia 12, which is a parliamentary grant, and Sambia's trading account, that is the trading entity. So in most of the slides, we'll see the financial performance of the boat, and separately we'll discuss that of the abbreviated trading account. So let's get a closer. On most of the slides, you'll see that we discuss the boat, and maybe Louise, if you can turn to the next one, I'll just indicate an example. We'll discuss the Sambia trading account as a separate slide that illustrates two separate entities which Sambia is made of as an institute. Then firstly, the state of expenditure as of 31st March, financial year end of Sambia 12. Sambia had a budget for the year under review of 58.9 million rand, and our actual expenditure as of year end reflects an amount of 58.2 million rand. That leaves a minimal surplus of approximately 1%, which results in an amount of 650,000 rand. The main reason for that variance is as a result of the under expenditure on compensation of employees as a result of the vacancy. When we move over then secondly to the revenue and expenditure as of 31st March of Sambia's trading account, one can see that the total budgeted revenue for the trading entity amounted to 56 million rand, and that the actual revenue of the institute amounted to 72 million rand, which generated a variance of 15.9 million rand. The total expenditure for the trading entity amounts to 55.99, and the actual expenditure amounted to 58 million rand, which left a variance of minus 2.3. That then, the net result of the total revenue and the net result of the total expenditure then results in the surplus of 13.698 million rand. During our presentation last year, one of the committee members requested the link between the augmentation received via the parliamentary grant in relation to the surplus generated. We can also clearly explain on the slide that one could see that the surplus is mainly generated as a result of an excess of course fees generated. And I think it's also nice to explain in the slides that Rufus presented to indicate that our PTD's person training days increased with 24%. So the augmentation was initially budgeted on a break-even situation, and our output increased that resulted in the surplus being generated. The next slide is just merely a narrative of what I've just explained. The next two slides are only for information purposes. First of all, firstly reflecting the vote 11, and the second slide reflecting the position of the trading account. This reflects the initial budget of Sambia as previously budgeted in our red book, our 2007 EME. Now, one could actually only note this because several processes have subsequent processes occurred in respect of the adjustment budget and also the NSEC process, 2007 NSEC process. In the section of the presentation that the DG deals with regard to the transformation of the academy, we'll also elaborate on Sambia's submission during the NSEC process.
And if I could just chip in share and recalling last year's question, it was very well put. It said, well, you shoved some of your votes into the trading account as augmentation, and then at the other side there's a surplus. That's not yet a very successful business. You're pushing subsidy in and it's showing it at the other end. And we promised to investigate, and as Marilyn has reported, we did. The amount of augmentation pushed in was to support a certain number of training days, and we have a surplus of at least 24% more training days than budgeted. So if we were a business, we'd be showing a tidy profit and distributing it to our shareholders around the table. As it is, we can roll it. That's one of the benefits of a trading account, is the treasury recognizes it can have ups and downs. So it lets us roll it now into the needs of our new academy, the premises, the infrastructure, the national site, and it gets put to good use. So unfortunately, we can't distribute it to ourselves as a committee.
Thank you. In respect of the governance of resources within the finance arena, we successfully implemented the financial management improvement plan, also based on a recommendation, a previous recommendation by the same committee, as well as our minister. We implemented a draft of the financial management improvement plan that incorporates aspects of asset management. We drafted a 3-year asset management plan in consultation with National Treasury, and the aspects according to the plan were implemented as planned. We also implemented a computerized debtor management system, FASTL, and although it was only fully implemented by the 31st of January 2007, so therefore it was only effective for the last 2 months of this financial year, the results, the positive results related to the implementation is visible in terms of the enhancement in our debt recovery process. For the very first time, SAMI was able to send our statements to our debtors that were not manually compiled, but electronically compiled. Then another highlight in the finance arena was the computerized course booking and quotation system. That was a system that we designed to incorporate or integrate several processes and systems within SAMBI. The PTDs, or statistical database, were run on Access, which is, everybody probably knows, the unstable database. And separately from that, we kept a record of invoices issued on Excel. This system's purpose was then to integrate and to also enable more stability in our data and data integrity. Then the unqualified audit reports, we take cognizance of the fact that it is a requirement of the National Department to implement sound financial management processes and related internal control measures and risk management strategies. However, we are proud to announce that SAMBI has received unqualified audit opinions for both its entities, the vote and trading entity, for the fourth consecutive year. In the internal audit and audit committee arena, SAMBI had an active and very fully effective audit committee who sat 4 times during the year and inter alia reviewed the financial statements prior to submission mirrors, the reports of the auditor general, the management letters, and also reviewed some of the internal audit assessments. SAMBI had in the beginning of the financial year a closed source internal audit function, which meant that there was a head of internal audit within the institute and an outsourced portion. During the year, after the promotion of the head internal audit, SAMBI fully outsourced its internal audit function, which were effective during the period under review. In the HR arena,
little supplementary remark. We actually have quite a blessing in SAMBI. If you look at the picture opposite page 61, you see our finance colleagues with the chair of internal audit, Dr. D.P. Pandanet, who's actually a professor of audit at Swanee University of Technology. It's just for fun, Chair. So our internal audit chair, in fact, the guy who specializes in the area, has researched it academically and heads the internal audit of several government departments. So we're lucky, even though we're quite a small entity, to get the benefit of someone who really knows how it's happening in various other components. I think it's the smiles on the face.
Then lastly, in terms of aid, human resource management and development, we successfully implemented aspects of PILA and JET. Then in terms of the second portion of my presentation is around the human resource oversight report. The slide on the overhead projector is in relation to the employment and vacancies by program. The next slide is the very same figures, only reflected by salary band for as at a specific time, 31st March 2007.
The bottom line there, which is very similar to many departments and indeed to DCSA, is a 20% to 1% vacancy, varying by level. At the end of the financial year, when I get to my slide at the end, Chef, we'll realize that in fact we deliberately let that creep up pending the restructure so that we will be able to promote or advertise vacancies in terms of the new structure. But that figure is the sort of thing that's been discussed, and it also has what Richard has been mentioned, is that you have a portion of your organogram that's actually unfunded at any time. So to call it vacancies is a bit unreal, because it does always have the money from Treasury actually fulfilled, even though it's an official account.
One could additionally also analyze the 20%. 40% of the 20% is due to resignation, 13% is as a result of expiry of contracts, and 47% as a result of transfer to other public services. The next slide is the family's rate profile as at 31st March 2007. Please note that this reflects the number of employees and not a percentage. So if one goes back to the previous slide, sorry Louisa, there's 192 number of posts, but the number of stalls reflects as 152. So if one moves over to the next slide, one could add up those yellow ones there, and that will result in 152. Now, to give a slightly different analysis of the slide, one can see that 68% of the profile consists out of African, 7% out of color, 5% Indian, and 20% white. This slide reflects family gender profile as of 31st March. Once again, number of people. One could again add that and that, and will add up to 152. And for the previous year, those two figures add up to the profile at that stage of 141. Of the total number of full posts of the 152, 44% were male and 56% female. The next slide represents the previous slide's information just in a slightly different way, but per salary level. One can see, for example, if one compares 2005 with 2006, that within the category salary band 1 to 4, male and female, the males reduce, and the female also reduced within that salary band. Another example would be the increase in the female category for level 5 to 8 as when compared to that of 2005. This slide depicts family's disability profile as 31st March. One could see that families increased in 1%, or one could actually say doubled in terms of numbers. The three number of people represented by a black female, a white female, and a black male. The information reflected here was enforced by self-disclosure of employees on the application for employment, the well-known JET 83.
some selected other aspects of HR. Since the implementation of FILA on the 1st of April 2006, Stanley referred approximately 13 cases to the health risk management manager, of which 12 were recommended to be declined and 1 to be accepted. The head of the department accepted 11, disapproved 11, and approved 2. Stanley recently held a health and wellness day that was very well received by all the employees, and it must please be noted that it was voluntary, anonymous, and that the result is, of per employee is not known to the employer. In respect of health screening, 128 staff members reported for testing of blood pressure, glucose, and cholesterol. The majority of staff that were tested in all three of the categories were found to be acceptable, and a small percentage were found to be having either high or low glucose, cholesterol, and blood pressure. They were referred for medical advice or referred to join the GEMS medical aid. In respect of HIV and AIDS voluntary counseling and testing, 52 staff members reported for testing, of which 16 were male and 36 were female. Of the 52 employees that were filled for testing, 48% were found to be negative and 4 were found to be positive. 48 people were found to be a negative and 4 to be positive. Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to hand over to the next presenter.
Just to repeat the important point Marilee's made, of course the voluntary counsel and testing, a very important part of the chair is to assure the employees that it is anonymous. The service that provided this for us said that our presenting rate, it was less than we hoped for. We would have liked to see more like 50% of staff on the first part come for testing. But they said that it's typically 20% on the first health and wellness day in an organization. So we were better than the average, so less good than we hoped. And when we're in our new premises, we're going to have health and wellness visits every week. Not, in other words, as a mass campaign, but for staff to be able gradually to get more and more used to the idea of presenting and having a visitor on the premises who would handle it. The results anonymously and be able to counsel people and send them to their practitioners and make sure they've got medical aid if indeed they are positive.
To continue then, Chair, in terms of the transformation to the Academy, our president articulated the fact that in terms of the capacity building and training, which is a very critical area for our government, the role that somebody should be playing as a major service provider in mass induction. And the mass induction part, we have a specific slide which we will articulate on when we come to that. But now specifically to look at our sources of somebody's output. Chair and honourable members will see that the number of person training days, the output, is quite considerable, and more than one third of our person training days is done in collaboration with higher education institutions, and we will speak more to that as we go. In proceeding then to the next slide, we would then find that when we do an analysis, you know, of the output in terms of just the what is spent, you know, on training and as per the National Department of Training Expenditure. The point I want to point is this small little dot over there, which is the 2% in terms of our graph. We find that across the provinces, it is claimed that on average, they spend average 2% as opposed to the 1%. But important to note here is that that 2% which we are reporting there, we still find that DPSA reported that last year, almost 50% of managers report they don't receive any training. So the question is,
what the department spend their funds on. And it's against that background, then to the next slide, we begin to say, let us look at the paradigm shift in terms of the academy. First of all, let us not focus on what we supply, but let's look at the user demand. And that's the important point we're focusing on now. And therefore, we would therefore begin to say, in response to the user demand, we want to ratchet up our training 5 times the total output. For that, of course, we would see that we need to work then with our provinces, as a strategy. And that clearly will demand, in terms of the strategy, that we involve universities, suppliers, university technology, and further education colleges, and the private sector. This is where the collaboration comes in. Of course, with that goes a curriculum, which must be quality assured, and materials of blended learning, and, of course, accreditation, which was referred to earlier by DGD Mudlana in terms of the accreditation challenge that we face, but we have also a strategy how we will go through the accreditation as well as the important monitoring of these programs. So in the reconstitution of Summit and Academy, we therefore want to say to provide alignment and collaboration among providers and users, so that especially the provincial academy. And in order to do that, the minister looked at this whole previous structure of Sunday and said, look, it's clear that it's inadequate in meeting the challenges. So the question is, to move forward, we then, the minister then indicated, and of course what we found was that the cost recovery set Sunday in the competition providers, as well as the scale of activities, is very small. Clearly then, with cabinet approval, the minister then moved towards us reconstituting as a new public service academy. We have to have a director general, which is our new director general, Dr. Hawkins, and to move from being a provider on a small scale to facilitating nationwide provision on large scale by a broad range of providers. And the point here, of course, is that this would then be done if we just turn the page through a process whereby we have 3 mantras in terms of facilitation, collaboration, classification, but important that it will go into 2 streams. The first thing will be the dealing with SMS. That's level 13 to 16, which we categorize as breaking to upper and lower SMS. And the second mainstream activity is the massified management of training. And that is within 25%, I mean, Rufus referred to earlier, the 10 and 50% of middle, junior middle managers coming in terms of us massifying, and the question that Mr. Mini asked is the DPSA, what are you going to do about the skill shortage? Somebody is responding by saying, through our DG, we will massify the management training program, and we will give further detail to that in the next slide. Now, if we look at the SMS, the first 3, senior management service, we know that that team will focus on level 13 and 16. We further also are saying that in terms of the way we're going to move forward, it will be collaboration. We're not going to compete anymore. The cake is big enough. It's how we sit around the table and how we allocate our role and get on with the output that's required, of course, in consultation with provincial academies. Clearly, of course, the DPSA, we must note here that they have a strategic framework for the management of leadership development. And we're working very closely with them, in partnership with them. In fact, we work closely with them so that whatever we do is aligned to the policies set by them. What would this entail? It would result in covering greater volume, more senior levels, with the help of higher education institutions as we move forward. And of course, here we focus on leadership skills, the hard and soft skills, and practitioner-oriented input. And meeting from experts. And the cognitive activities, of course, very important, underpinned by research and training. Looking at the second stream, which is the sub-SMS thing, which is the real massification which was spoken about earlier. This is where we are saying that 700 or 1,000 of civil servants in junior middle management, let us focus on them. Let us ensure that we cover generic and functional training. Let us ensure that we draw the full range of providers, universities, and all the players in the field. Let us ensure that they encompass modern methodologies, which challenge which also leads to blended learning, use of e-learning strategies, and once again, the alignment with the DPSA HRD strategy is critical so that we can show importance to specific departments within the ministry. We move forward on one agenda. Secondly, in terms of the quality assurance curricula, the monitoring evaluation, this is very important underpinning to ensure that the massified capacity comes in the way that we can monitor it, and also there are specified courses that can gradually make compulsory, that is the presidential induction program. Now, in moving ahead, I thought just to show that we see the different levels in the public service, supervisors to senior, but we also notice we speak about generic competencies, functional competencies, and sectoral competencies. And we just want to put this in a more sort of diagrammatic picture to show the different levels of models of programs that is run between all of those. Clearly now, in that process, there needs then to be a strategy. And the strategy that we're talking about as we go to the next slide is that it was a consultation, collaboration with provinces, and under Director General Leadership. We had our very first, very successful meeting in March, where for the first time, somebody with the DPSA, Development Bank of South Africa, DPLG, and SAFWA came together in the room. And there we sat down and said, now let us together put it together and move forward as stakeholders. The outcomes, of course, are very exciting, in that now we are saying that we're moving towards the establishment, we explained the academy, we had buy-in endorsement. We also find that there has now been the need to network, which is important. And of course also the mobilization of stakeholders, which is very important as a response to capacity building in terms of the way forward. The DG came up with this little onion model where we have everyone involved in the local sphere, provincial sphere, national sphere, and all our providers and stakeholders we work with. And in this way we believe this national training landscape will begin to inform differently and better how we do work and how we produce the capacity required. And as we move on then in terms of local government, we find that there's an interdepartmental committee between SAMDI and DPLG working very closely together, having periodic forums with CAUCA to make sure that we're in line with the things in the municipalities issues. We also have noticed that at the moment we work together on supply chain management and financial management training, covering three municipalities, which is the Northwest and the Eastern Cape, as well as, in terms of KwaZulu-Natal. And, of course, to initiate joint planning and strategic development processes for curriculum development for norms and standards. And so, on that basis, we then begin to see that we just want to posture to you in the next slide, just on case studies. We spoke about accelerated development program earlier. Here we're just sharing with you again that this is a very important program because this is where from succession planning programs our pool of managers will come from. And in the these will further expand later in terms of the new structure, how this will work in terms of preparation and process way forward. You can see the magnificent 77 candidates are proceeding now to the executive phase, and we're quite excited because that is where our pool will come from in having managers very competent to manage the services. If we go to the next slide, in the executive development program, here we can also indicate that we're working with universities, there's six of them, two business schools, and universities include University of Western Cape, University of Fort Hare, North East University, and DIT in Durban. And so we do find that the objective of this is to increase the management and leadership capacity of senior management service. The models, of course, have been so designed and can lead to a more successful administration with supplementary dissertation. We also just wanted to flag that in terms of our case studies, our focus area for 2007 and beyond, the max induction program, very important, because here we want to ensure that whatever we interactively produce and train on has gone through quality checks. And we have also pilot rewritten workbooks, of course, with KwaZulu-Natal. We also want to report that as far as the trends of strength is concerned, JICA, which is Japanese International Cooperation Agency, have just had their first AGM with a conference, and they trained 24 persons from 10 different countries, which we supported them in, and now we're busy with the second tranche of Train for Trainers program that is to come about. In terms of the DRC work, we've trained 300 Congolese officials, and then also in the government-wide program, as you can see there, we've also been very busy, and for 2008, we will develop further training materials in that regard. Coming to our next slide, the donor-funded programs, we spoke earlier about this, we just highlighted to you, there's the program training women managers, the gender mainstreaming, the GPZ have been very instrumental in assisting us and supporting us financially, and so we are busy with that process, and there's another meeting coming up very soon in the new month. And as I said earlier, the Netherlands Embassy has helped us with three different municipalities in three provinces. And then, of course, just in terms of the last case study we would present to you, is our fourth country. With the senior support, which we mentioned earlier, clearly we feel that the importance of some of the players, the importance of support of Africa's contribution towards the African reconstruction, and our recent output included the 300 we mentioned earlier, but, of course, it's engaging at the DRC in terms of their agenda, how we can come to support them to plan and refurbish the institution. And, of course, as we speak right now, we have colleagues in Burundi who are busy there working on the scoping exercises, of course, which is part of the work we're doing in Sudan, Rwanda, Burundi, DRC. And that is just the case studies and the strategy that we're doing, and I would hand back to the DG now to lead us further.
Thanks, Professor Hendricks, Sharon, honorable colleague. I did warn that because, in fact, one of our big activities in the seven-year was strategizing and beginning to roll out the new academy to tackle new strategy, we will be using a bit of our time today to point to how the present is going to go into the future and what we hope we'll be telling you more about next year. So this is, we are after all in October, and this is some of the stuff that's moved up on since March on top of the previous model of operation. And just to recap the key points from my colleagues who've presented so far, really our new strategy is quite sound. It's to say, remembering that diagram like the fried egg, there's a complicated, large, national and provincial and local government training landscape. And the idea, and secondly, there is really a need not just to concentrate on the executive level, but to shift the spotlight additionally onto middle and junior managers where really huge numbers are involved. That's what we mean by the phrase massification. And the idea then is that our prime job is to mobilize a wide range of providers come into and to collaborate in this national landscape, but to ensure alignment to government purposes by the development and provision of curricula through accreditation by which people will be accredited to trained government departments, and then to monitor and evaluate the delivery for quality. So that's the overall approach. Now, we've also seen from one of Professor Hendricks' slides that national and provincial departments budget not just 1%, but actually on average 2%. Some are less, some are more. But the average is 2% on training. Yet, when DPSA does a survey, they find that half of managers report they're not getting training. So, one wonders either that more training money is needed, but more likely perhaps that the training money needs better to be applied, and that DPSA will help us ensure that departments actually spend it on the training for which it was budgeted rather than something else. And that means, we hope, that we can achieve massified training without asking Treasury for new money, but by getting departments to make their money available, if we make available a much broader set of providers in the different areas and sectors for governments to spend their training, government departments to spend their training budget on. So that's really, Chair, the overall approach. Now, to get from being a small-scale provider to a large facilitator of large-scale provision, involves quite a transformation process. At the very beginning of the year, our managers met, and so this was a strategic meeting with a difference. It was really to start scoping how to get into this very ambitious new approach. And the main way within the organization was the idea of project teams planning different aspects of the transition from the present to the future. I needn't go through them. They're mentioned there. But importantly, some of them have been underway. Others are preparing or paused until we complete our New York Academy organogram. But for example, still on the previous slide, we've had good meetings with SACWA and TCCA because our courses under the new approach will want to be accredited to be able to regulate the providers. We've been devising what the much larger scale monitoring and evaluation will be so that every civil servant who goes through training will give us feedback of her or his experience. The massified induction, Prof. Hendricks mentioned, has to be rolling out concurrently. The infrastructure is in place. We've got the task teams with the provinces. The material is produced and being piloted these very weeks. So in different ways, these are how we are building the new organization with our think power from the existing standing. It's not really the next slide for study, but this is, of course, very much to our mind, it's the organogram of the new academy. Not very much larger, just jump one slide forward. Our previous posts were actually 192. We've bent the warm bodies as people, as vacancies have arisen. We've waited for our match and place and advertising process. So although it looks a bit more dramatic than it is, in fact, our organogram only goes up by about 40 posts. D.G. Levine, of course, remembered, emphasized the important issues that will Treasury in November and December tell us that they are funding the new organogram. Let's just go back and look at it. So that provides 230 posts, but we wait to see where the Treasury agrees with our minister who has signed off on this. I just want to tell you the broad structure rather than any of the details. This is the executive development arm, and that will proceed much as at present in collaboration with certain institutions, but attempt much more than before to reach the upper SMS as well. And we have some good offers of international assistance, for example, from France, where they focus very much on the topmost management. The interest, though, is these four branches, because that is the engine room of the new approach. One branch deals with providing the curricula, either from what we have, or from what provinces have, or from what will be specially written or reviewed. The second mobilizes the providers. The third attempts to connect them to the business, to the likely users in nine provinces and what we like to call the 10th province, namely national, based in Swani. That is our strategy for reminding people, as Rupert mentioned right at the beginning, that 7 or 8 out of 10 warm bodies are actually in the provinces. And that when you have a national focus in your training strategy, you have to remember that the interaction between provincial departments or people of national departments in provincial locale, between them and the training providers, that's what that branch has got to drive. Just back on the slide, the very last part, that is the mix of corporate services plus a very strong special project division to handle things like, you saw some of the bullets where we helped GIPSA deal with offers for public sector training and also the international intervention, DRC, Sudan, Burundi, that were mentioned. They will be handled by that branch. So those are the big chunks of the new academy. see the numbers on the next slide, and we can skip over to the process. The minister has approved process. The minister, in her responsibility for Sandy, had to get approval from herself in her responsibility as DPSA, and then send it back to herself as Minister for Sandy and pass it on to us. And she managed that process. Crucially, we've defined the KPAs and the job profiles for all the new positions. There are sort of 29 categories of position across the 200 odd jobs. And very much at the moment, Chair, in last month and this month, we're going through the match and place process for people have indicated preferences for positions in the new academy. They've had interviews, submitted CVs, competence tests, and so on, for their suitability to participate in the new strategy. And the profile of the organization is described there, because we will be handling, trying to broker 10,000 training events, rather than provide 1,000 training events a year. It means a very different kind of more management-oriented, technologically enabled approach. Next slide, which brings us near to the end. This question, Chair, of, in fact, we'll stay here for a moment, of what will, do you have an unfunded organogram? Our business model, which Treasury has been very interested in and very supportive about, sees that we would expect the fees for training paid by the department to pass through the academy on the way to the provider, because that will give us teeth to do the quality assurance, the monitoring and evaluation. The providers will know that they're being scrutinized as they receive their fees sent through us from the department. So in fact, as we grow the number of person training days to the five-fold increase that we're hoping for, you see a huge throughput of money through the department. We call it expenditure here, but crucially, it's expenditure by department sent through the academy monitoring for quality to the provider. The providers know, therefore, that they're being kept under scrutiny. And there you see the revenue. The effect of this change in this role, that to begin with, we will probably spend more than we'll be able to take in our little management fee for the various events. But as we move through the 3 years, we think that the deficit will gradually drop, and we are hoping for sustainability by the outer third year. So at that stage, we hope that the money flowing, the total expenditure on training in the national landscape will balance the total revenue, including our own operating costs, and we'll have to be asking Treasury for very little. But in the immediate, we're asking them for rather more on top of our present budget in order to set up. And we're as excited as you to see what happens in November and December. But this is so important that you try to say to Treasury, we need more money for training, push up our training budget from 100 million to 600 million, load of losses. But what we say is, we are intending to be the energizer of the provision of extra training for which departments will pay with their training budget. So that's not 600 million rand of new money, but 600 million rand of departmental training budgets shaken out of their tree and oriented towards what we hope will be a much larger landscape of providers at all levels. If you illustrate that process graphically on the next slide, this is what we hope will be the person training days becoming available, crucially not from us, but from all those providers, universities, FET colleges, private sector providers, provincial academies, and as they use the curricula, pass through the money to the providers and get monitored, we hope that the expenditure, which in the start-up years is slightly higher, will come to match the revenue by the outer year. In between, we're asking Treasury for the difference, and we think we achieve sustainability over that. And I think we've covered this slide. I've spoken about the model. Let's go on to the next one. This is early thinking for maybe 3 or 4 years hence. Yeah. By the time you're getting 10,000 training events around the country every year, it amounts to 20 courses every week in an average province. Now that's a serious amount of training, some of it within departments, some of it provided by facilitation from outside. And we've been encouraged by Public Works and by Treasury to say, instead of hiring premises and camping in other people's places, we can envisage, a bit like Singapore, a national chain of public sector academies at provincial and national level. In many cases, the provinces have premises which can be refurbished and adapted. For example, Gauteng is going that way, and we would like to see 9 provincial academies plus that 10th province called National in collaboration with each other, with premises for this volume of training, having gradually come on stream in about 5 years' time. And the Treasury's PPP, a public-private partnership unit, is due to start guiding us. We've had our initial discussions there. The next slide, I think we've covered the importance of accreditation, of marketing those components in the organogram. The last slide, Chair, which is not in your presentation, so please take it on the screen. We thought, prompted by your discussion with DPSA, that we should highlight some of the challenges so that you can remember the slide next year and say, how are you progressing on the tough issue? And obviously, getting our organogram into place with the placement of existing staff and recruitment of new staff. We're simultaneously moving to new premises to go with a new profile of the academy that has been provided in our budgeting. These provincial sites ginger the national training landscape at all levels. IT and information systems infrastructure to help hold the whole thing together. Keep track of the much greater number of transactions, events and providers. This involves in our new organogram. You'll remember D.P. Levine talking about the silo issue. We've restructured. We hope to confront that issue, but always when you define components, how they relate is a problem. And of course, this whole model is essentially collaboration-driven among the institutions in the landscape. That diagram of the fried egg with its national, its provincial, its nationally provincial, its local, its providers, its partners, it's as often and in as many ways as possible making this hang together. I dwelt a bit on the new financial model, shaking the training money out of the department's tree and making sure it gets to providers with the small management fees for Tamdi so that it doesn't have to worry about an unfunded mandate from Parliament. That is a new model, and we're going to have to see how it unfolds over the 3 years. I mean, our backup plan is to stay as we are, which is really quite creditable, looks very similar in Canada or Ghana. But we are trying to be much more ambitious in South Africa. The fivefold increase in training availability does mean a new model, and that means various risks that are touched on in the writing. Controlling the finances, controlling the HR, achieving the collaboration. The President has urged us to try and raise the bar. Well, we're giving it a go, and we'll keep you posted meeting by meeting. And then in the longer term, the sort of prayer of any person involved in training and HR development is you can make the training available, you can get people into the venue, they can go back into their workplaces. Does it actually make a difference there? Now that is the last thing one tends to get to because we are so busy actually making it all happen. But in the longer term, we have done some impact assessments, partly because donors have encouraged us to, and that's going to have to be wired into our thinking. As we get this stuff on the ground, we'll be watching in year two and three, going to people back in their workplaces and saying, were the machines there necessary? Was your supervisor supportive? Was there money in the budget for all the things that you learned to plan for? And so on. So I think that rounds us off. It's already proving an exciting ride. Isn't that so? You can add on the TV, like the journey, enjoy the ride. We hope you'll enjoy it with us, bumps and all.
Thank you very much, DG. I think, colleagues, you will agree with me that this well-structured presentation was, in fact, a multi-purpose presentation. The one purpose is that it addresses itself to what you expect in the annual report. The other purpose is that it talks to you in terms of where is somebody at the moment, as we are speaking, reflecting on those things that are currently happening in somebody. Of course, you may then say it those are things that take on from what happened during the last financial year. And also talking to us about the future in terms of what are the priorities. So, as I'm saying, it's actually multiple. It's a one-stop shop. You are stopped there, you get everything. It's a very sensitive once more. I think as a portfolio committee, we can also check with our colleagues from other portfolio committees that when everybody speaks of a box, you must not only think of the negative from a box, not only the concerned Baragona, but these are boxes from where you get the targeted presentation. Those are my comments. Colleagues, over to you. This is what Sam said. Baba Zawaza, Mama Zomela, Nyambi. Yeah, so we only have those hands and answers if we go on. I know you are not raising most questions because you know that from this three, you are going to see how many boxes. Can you take those hands and can I, like I said, the chairpersons are supposed to be meeting now of all portfolio committees. And I would say, am I being excused and blah, 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 after raising your question, you take over. Do you agree? Mm. I agree. Okay, thanks.
No, thank you, Chairperson. I am not going to raise questions. I just want to make one or two comments. Chair, I want to appreciate this presentation. It's simple, straightforward, very encouraging. And I think you are making our appetite quite sharp. I do want to also appreciate a very interesting and clear collaboration between SAMDI and DPSA. It is quite clear to me that this tendency of government institutions locking themselves into little systems is not the kind of game you see here.
you are seeing quite a very interesting interplay between the CSA and some people, which is encouraging. Thirdly, I do want to say that, you know, the last time we had such a presentation, we raised the question of collaboration between some of the higher education institutions and so on. And at that time, at least in 2005, I remember, there was very little, interaction between Zambia and those. Now you can clearly see a very, obvious move towards collaboration, interaction, working together, which opens up a very wide space for something to operate and for the department and employees to play within, which is quite promising and indeed one hopes that this is going to achieve the required results. Those are the few comments that I wanted to make. And again, just express our appreciation for this very good presentation. And
I think was it Yambi, the next one?
The last one.
You are the last one.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you, Chairperson. I also would like to express my appreciation for the presentation. I think we have actually set it during the right bumps and all. On the issue of partnership with institutions of higher education, during the presentation, it was indicated that there seems to be a lot of interest on the senior management level program, which would offer, you know, the candidate an opportunity to, you know, to move beyond, you know, to be accredited to, by the institutions of higher education. And I think our intention is not to become a competitor with institutions of higher education, much as we want to involve them. But I just want to know as to what extent do we involve these institutions in developing our programs and curriculum? You know, because I think as a public service, we know what we want to achieve. We know our challenges, which are different from those of the institutions of higher education. So I just want us to be careful to make sure that we don't just duplicate what is taking place in these institutions. And secondly, Chairperson, I appreciate the 4 consecutive years of unqualified audit report. But as I was going through the audit report on I think it's on page 114 of the report. Firstly, I see that the basis of accounting that is being referred to is still basing it on GAAP. And I think that there's been a movement from GAAP to GRAP. So how did that affect us? Or are we not compelled to abide by GAAP? And I just want to know as to the issues that were raised here on internal control, the revenue and receivables, as well as those other material corrections that come up as a result of this. What is it that we are doing to make sure that these are tended? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, let me join my colleagues and echo the statement that they've already said. Indeed, it is a detailed presentation that is taking us forward. It's only one question around the issue of the internal audit. According to the report, you had co-sourced internal audit with KPMG. It sounds very interesting. If maybe you can take us through your experience, maybe there's something out of it that you can learn and be able to assist wherever it can be possible. It's very, very interesting. Share with us the co-source part, how is the whole thing being done. Thank you, Jonathan.
Just before you respond,
thank you, Chairperson. I'm just thinking about it, that the Chairperson is left me. Just one point that I forgot. It came out from your presentation that, you know, there seems to be a problem with the trainees. Although there is money made available by departments for training, but this is not utilized. I just want to know as to whether the prospective candidates, do they volunteer to come for this training, or are they identified within that department? And maybe you could suggest the best way that you think will help us improve. Thank you.
Over to DG and your team.
Chair, as I promised the previous chair, I'll hand over all the difficult ones. But in fact, cover some myself. Firstly, to thank colleagues for their attention to the document and for their friendly comments, and also for their quite probing questions. Should we perhaps start with the money, David and Marilee, the two questions about DARF and the notes, and then Lucas can talk about how candidates come into courses, and also share with you the remaining questions. And then I'll talk about audit effects.
Thank you, Lizzie. Thank you for the interesting question. It's actually very valuable to note that, because if you refer to page 79, the accounting qualities of the vote. In my presentation, I started off by saying the two separate entities, Stanley's vote, the parliamentary grant, and the basis for compilation of those sets of statements are on the cash basis, or generally known as GRAP, Government Recognized Accounting Practice, whereas the notes on page 114 reflects the framework as set out for the basis compilation for the Stanley trading account, which is a trading entity which is regulated in terms of Regulation 90, which requires us to account for in accordance with GAAP, generally accounting, accepted accounting practice. Then further, in terms of the matters raised, I think it's important to note that during this financial year, the Auditor General's reporting format changed. In the past, they only had qualified audit opinions or unqualified, and thereafter instances of matters, and the other matters were mainly reflected in the management report under housekeeping matters. This year, they've changed their reporting format, and they brought up the almost housekeeping matters to immediately to be reported on the face of the Auditor General's report. That's also why we see the other matters. So I think it's important to know. No qualifications, no important emphasis of matters. However, Stanley Mason already compiled financial management improvement plans to take cognizance of the comprehensive management letter issued by the Auditor General to assign responsibility to address those issues and to also assign specified time frames within which they should be addressed. And we've also held a meeting with the internal auditors to also verify that the plan has been successfully implemented in a response and in preparation for next year's financial year.
Maybe I can just, honourable members, maybe I can just add that in terms of
where government is moving in terms of its financial reporting. It is for a fact so that we are complying currently in accordance with CAP, but CAP mainly on a modified cash basis of accounting. So we're moving from that part, and the Honourable Member is correct, that we are moving from cash basis of accounting to an accrual basis of accounting, which will be more or less the same as what is the practice in the private sector. So we're moving towards, it's still going to be called CAP, to identify it for government purposes, but it's going to be the GAAP principle that is going to be used. Then in terms of the financial management improvement plan, remember that we said that for every year, after the auditors highlighted certain matters, it might be matters of emphasis or other matters, from our side, we need to compile a plan, implement it, and ensure that the aspects are quite fully delivered, as also mentioned by Marilyn. So that's the plan that she's referring to. And the plan in itself really addressed the detail of all the matters as highlighted under the vote and highlighted under the trading entity. If I can also deal with the question in terms of the audit portfolio, or are you going to attend to that? Are you going to talk to that? Okay. Thank you.
So thanks, colleagues.
Now
on the two trading matters.
Thanks, DG. I would like to respond to Honorable Mazuba's question and study the one of nominations of trainees. Basically, we've got a mix of the process of nominations. Firstly, public servants themselves can volunteer and nominate themselves to undergo a particular training program. But in some cases, the supervisors themselves nominate people who need some training in particular areas because maybe of performance issues or maybe because of fast-tracking issues, etc. Therefore, it's quite a mix. But this particular question, ma'am, also goes back to the heart of one of the dynamics which we need to deal with as far as the academy is concerned, which is the whole question of compulsory programs versus non-compulsory programs. And we have agreed and strategized and involved with the minister to have a program like induction as a compulsory program. And it will become compulsory through a ministerial directive which will require all public servants to undergo an induction program before their probation period is confirmed. And that is linked to appointment in the public service. That's one question on the nomination. The other question which you also raised about our partnership with high institutions also again goes to the strategy for the academy, which is all about collaboration. And on this particular question, maybe one clarity, our programs are not only for SMS members, but they cover all managerial levels from level 6 upwards. Therefore, it's not only SMS members who are exposed to programs which are offered in collaboration with higher education, but also junior and middle managers. And we come a long way with higher education institutions. And you arrive, the challenge will be not to duplicate, not to offer the similar kind of academic B-admin programs which are available in all institutions, but rather to offer programs which are relevant in terms of the workplace, practical, but addressing the key issue which I raised in the presentation, improving service delivery. And at the beginning, we used to issue tenders, and university had to tender, and the university which won the tender was the one which will run with the program in terms of development of material and teaching. But we move away from that particular approach over the last 2 years, where we are saying to universities to say that this training landscape or case is big enough for all of you, and we encourage them to work in regional consortia. And at the moment, we've got the North, Central, and Southern consortia offering or covering public servants in those regions. But the programs, we are very particular when it comes to this. We sit with them, we don't leave them to the program and then we are hands off. We work with them step by step from the learning framework, the curriculum, the development of material, the content, the examples, and the assessment tools. Though the program will be based on sound public administration theories, but our programs differ from those offered by UCIS in the sense that they are also practical, address practical issues at the workplace. And we had big fights on this with IT institutions, and Luis will come in on the latest fight we had with the last consortium, where material had to be sent back several times, not only twice, thrice, but several times because they were academic in nature. It was as if you are attending a public admin too, as the Minister of Stellenbosch. And we don't want that. As public service, the role, the mandate of FAMD is to ensure that all the programs offered by any provider address the key challenges which we have in the public service. And that's the challenge which we are grappling with in working with this industry. But I must say, there's been a great improvement and understanding of the kind of programs which are interactive, responding to the challenges required in the public service. But I think maybe just to zoom here for example, Luis may want to come in here and talk about the latest example.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, honorable members. My DDT is referring to the relationship that we have with Swan University of Technology as a lead, and they are responsible for developing our executive development program. The strategy that the DDT is articulating is forcing somebody to build a new skill set. We're not providing training, we are facilitating training, we are collaborating with partners, so it forces us to take a more oversight role, a more monitoring and evaluation role. In our partnership with Swan University of Technology, we've asked them to develop 10 modules which align very closely to the SMS competency framework. And as the DDG has indicated, the quality, despite our own perceptions, the quality was somewhat suspect. And the quality was respect to what our target was in terms of the public service. So somebody has built in other checking mechanisms. For example, we send the draft material to our subject experts. We send our materials through to sector-specific departments such as Treasury or Communications to make an input into the public sector aspects of the material. Somebody is also forced, by virtue of this partnership, to transform the university to move away from the academic perspective more to a public service or public sector perspective. And that is proving to be quite a challenge to manage. As you can well imagine, how does one tell a professor he does not know what we want in terms of the public sector and what he knows to be happening in the academic terrain. In terms of the challenges, we have also tried to mitigate this with ensuring competent facilitators and experienced facilitators who have both the academic background as well as the public sector experience.
But as our colleagues indicate, it has to be quite an active push and shove. Universities can accredit, they've got senior folk in them, but they're in universities as directly perceived, so the really practical orientation we need has to be quite vigorously bargained, and as you say, also with facilitators, not necessarily university people, but who have practical experience, and then mediate the stuff, make it what the users need. I'd love to take credit, colleague, for the internal audit move, but in fact, I've been applying something over a couple of years that was learned elsewhere in government. I think Department of Science and Technology a couple of years were the first people to have this idea of involving an outsourced or co-sourced partner in the internal audit. And when I was then head of the HSRC, which again is a smallish organization, about 250 people, you found the problem that DST has solved, that if you're small, your internal audit component is not big enough to provide a career path for the internal audit practitioner, and they whittle through and go. And as DPSA reported this morning, you then have the problem of keeping the function going. So you rather get the continuity if you're a smaller department by buying it in and knowing that the people who are serving you get their career development in their primary organization. And so it stabilizes the situation. So that we've taken advantage of that essential insight. When our internal audit principal person moved off to Sri Lanka, we said, let's try this other way of working. Now, as with outsourcing our training, managing the job to get what you need becomes a new focus. And that isn't trivial. You have to be very attentive. You can't say, right, it's now somebody else's problem. It remains your problem to get your solution with the help of somebody else. And that you go through the whole planning process as you would with an annual audit plan approved by the committee, with activities, with the regular reporting. And interestingly, then the current practice seems to be you bring the committee itself under scrutiny. There is a committee evaluation exercise and a provider evaluation exercise, because internal audit providers have set the standards, and then there is a process by which they held up to review. Crucially then, that person reports directly to the DG as if she or he were on the payroll. They're often in the building, but now they're getting their support in all the specialist areas from, in our case, KPMG and another partner from Pricewaterhouse, but they're the internal anchor person, and you still get the reporting to the DG internally and to the chair of the audit committee. So we're a year into it. Thanks for the question. And so far it's going very effectively. I think the level of activity and the level of technical competence of detail has been an improvement. So we're on a 3-year arrangement, and we'll be able to report year by year. Acting Chair, I hope you haven't missed anything. Thanks very much so far.
Are there any further questions, comments? No?
Well, this is very exciting for me. I really can't miss myself. But I thought I should just mention that last week we got a presentation on the annual report from Tisha, I think. They are also considering opening up an academy. And we suggested to them that, they could consider putting it under the umbrella of Zambi. And they were very not opposed to it. I thought we should mention it here so that if you have not thought about it, think about it and maybe start communicating with them. Thanks, Chair.
Chair, the committee is very well placed for lateral energizing like that. We'll certainly follow up with their newly appointed head. We'll draw a careful distinction. Where there are specialisms, we're very careful not to go. The Foreign Affairs Academy that teach diplomacy and international relations and that sort of stuff. The Police Academy teaches policing and security and so on. But the generic management part of it, the managing your budget and your people, that's exactly where government can do well by sharing across departments with an entity like that. So we'll go to them and say, would they like to share what's available on the generic, and they'll complement it with all the specialized items and stuff. So we'll appreciate the lead. So I think I should just mention on the question of scale, once you signal yourself as a collaborator, Chair, sometimes you start to get bowled over by demand. And, we are rushing to catch up. I think Rupert could just say, which program is it for that?
It's a gender awareness and training program for 15,000 employees at the Department of Justice, training across various levels. And it's not only that one, therefore what he is saying is that though we are still preparing ourselves for the new business model for the academy, already the demand is looking 100% in this response immediately.
Thank you. and that was our proposal, fact, justice has been so efficient. And that is where you say you've got to grow the provider market, worry about the content, and then monitor the delivery. But if you can make that model work, you can expand way beyond where you were before. And these are, I hope, the early clues, and you're sending us more. Thank you.